Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is a perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life there's no surrender, and there's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through. We'll fight to the death. We are soldiers. We are soldiers.
Part of the Patriot Network, Patriot Journalist Network, I should say. And if you are a Facebook user, you can find the Patriot Journalist Network just by simply putting in Patriot Journalist in the search engine. Also, you can find it on the web by going to www.patriotjournalist.com, in which you can see the Twitter team, in which you can join, and go ahead and check that out. I recommend it. So that is the website to go to. And also, I like to thank the folks if they were listening live from Blog Talk Radio. For Blog Talk Radio. Getting messing up tonight. And also, if they are listening live from the Bard's Logic Political Talk website. And if you are listening from the Bard's Logic Political Talk website or visiting it, you can go to the Get Involved page, and there you will see a button to a link where it will take you to the Sheldrick Wildlife Trust. And there you will see a button, a red button that says Save an Elephant. And what that will do is send you to a place where for only $50 a year, You can help contribute to helping out a baby elephant whose parents were killed by poachers. And I think that would be a wonderful gift, wonderful Christmas gift for a child or a spouse or a friend, because I believe they give you updates and also pictures of the elephant that you are helping. So that can be found, as I said, on the Bard's Logic Political Talk website, which you can get a link there from the homepage of the show on Blog Talk Radio. And anyone who does so, if they would like, they could just send me a message from the contact page of the website, of the Bard's Logic Political Talk website. And if you'd like, I could give you a shout out on the show about your good deed. Now, tonight, I would like to introduce now the topic, which will be the Ron Paul's retirement speech. And we will discuss about his speech and analyze it. And of course, his farewell address to Congress. And what will this mean to the Liberty Movement, or for the Liberty Movement? And so at this time, I'm going to open up the mic to someone you well know, and that is Chris. Let me open up your mic, Chris. Thank you very much for calling in. How are you?
Good, buddy. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Doing good. Got a little tongue-tied there, but, you know, that's I got to slow down and not talk so fast, but there's so much you want to try to get in a two-hour show, and I don't want to take up too much of the time with introduction.
Yeah,
but it is
sure.
Important for folks to check out the as I said, I think it's a great Christmas gift to visit the Charter Wildlife Trust. Sure. Well, yeah, you know, you help sponsor one. You're not going to be bringing it home, see? So you can sponsor a baby elephant without even having to worry about cleaning up any crap or anything of that nature. So.
Right. So I was just I didn't get to finish. There's probably another half hour of that Johnson conversation. I'm glad I listened to that because there was some real key things he was saying and or possibly not saying.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that actually, and like I said, I've only got, two-thirds of the conversation because there's probably another half hour and I had to shut it down to get to this show. But he said a couple things I think that are important to talk about going into the Ron Paul conversation. Because one of the things that caught my mind was, he discussed money. And he said that, we look at a $6 billion election expenditure between Obama and Romney. So all the money players were pitting against, those two players, or actually probably bribing both sides. We know that. But the Libertarian Party only collected about $2 million. And he said that they got about 1.2 million votes, so they were less than $2 a vote, where Obama and Romney spent almost 20 bucks a vote, when you run all the numbers out. So I thought that was an interesting figure, but he said something else, because people were asking, what would you do different? How could have, how did you see the results? Because he was thinking they were going to get about 5% based on some of the polling information they saw. But at the end they got like 1%, and he said it's money. He said that several times in he was doing that online, town hall chat kind of environment where the question would come up and then he would answer it. So it's kind of a cool environment. A couple glitches here and there, but it worked out pretty good. But he said that Ron Paul has he used this as a figure, and it absolutely dropped my jaw, because Ron Paul pulls in about $40 million each time he runs for president. So Johnson was definitely wondering where the money was at.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, wow, he said, because that was the number two issues. One, money, so you can afford to get your message out. Two, being on the debates. He said that somebody did some research, and they were mentioned 1/1,000th time compared to Obama. In other words, for every 1,000 times Obama was mentioned somewhere, the Libertarian Party was mentioned once. So he said that is huge. Proportionally, if you looked at the polling, you know, they've played with numbers, you know, so you know how numbers go. He said proportionally, if they would have been mentioned based on their polling, it would have been more like 1/100th, and he would have been happy with that because the message would have gotten out there. But he talked about the message. So that was very interesting. But I was, you know, they did ask. One of the person asked the question is, how come more Ron Paul people didn't vote for Gary Johnson? And, you know, he said that's a good question, and I'm sure that's something they'll be, you know, thinking about over time. But he said that one of the factors was the huge battle between Obama and Romney. Got to get a Republican in there, got to get rid of the socialists. The socialists going, oh, my God, here comes a one percenter. We got to do everything we can to get, you know, defeat Romney.
Right.
It was the battle of the two most corrupt systems against the future or freedom of this country, whether it was the corporatist, which is a form of socialism, you know, where all the rules they live by, the wealth they have, the deals they cut, the deals they get from the government, taxes, bailouts, federal money, you know, backroom deals, they are the representation to the average person. It's just amazing. He didn't, it's amazing he did as good as he did, considering his background in this economy. And then you have the other side, you know, the big government, socialism that scares the hell out of the conservatives and the people on the right. So it was the war of the century against two of the greatest fears that this country's faced at the same time. So, he, you know, Johnson. So it was kind of interesting to see. I'll have to go back and finish the last half of it because there was a lot of questions that kind of rolled through where you're kind of like, whatever. Yeah, that was a stupid question. You know, they finally got – I was surprised. It actually took about 7 or 8 questions to get to the pot question. So that was a turn because usually pot comes up in the first, you know, 2 sentences. So I kind of respected that a little bit. You know what I mean? Oh, my God. Anyway, so it was, you know, they also asked him about is he potentially thinking about running for a Senate position in 2014? And he, and they asked him about, Johnson.
Johnson, okay, I'm sorry. I was talking to somebody while listening to you at the same time. Sorry about that. Go ahead.
And,
well, chatting, not talking,
but
go ahead.
No, that's all right. But he said, I haven't logged in yet, anybody, in case you don't see me on chat, because I literally hung up, closed down the internet and called you. But one of the things that he said, you know, one of the first questions was, have you thought about running as a senator for New Mexico? And he said, I've thought about a lot of things, you know, because it was interesting, too. Go ahead.
No, just because that's right. I'm recalling you watched the... I guess another town hall, Gary Johnson. Go ahead.
What?
Well, you were telling me earlier, Gary Johnson had something
on the web,
right? That's what you're talking about.
That's all this information I'm giving you.
Right, it's coming back to me.
Okay.
So it's been one of those days, Chris. Go ahead.
Yeah. That was weird. Got like 10 minutes later, you go, oh, wait, that's what you're talking about. Okay. So there were some interesting things. You know, he just went down through.
Well, you were talking about Ron Paul and Gary Johnson, and I kind of got some wires crossed on that.
Yeah, I guess. Shouldn't be multitasking. But they asked him some key questions. There were some interesting questions talking about, you know, him running for the Senate versus running for the presidency. He said something very important. He said, there's a point in time when you get through with a presidential race, you don't want to jump up in the next year and start talking about running again because he says that is not received well by people. So that was an interesting point that he made. So he was hesitant about saying, yes, I'm going to run again.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I recommend to anybody that's interested, it was well done, good questions. Like I said, I ran, you know, I had to walk away 2/3 of the way into it. They talked about different things, you know, about the Libertarian Party, what do they need to do, this, that, and the other. I guess that somebody asked a question about, you know, the war in Israel that started today, and I did hear about a whole bunch of rockets and things like that, but I guess I didn't, like Gary Johnson, I'm not caught up in that, so I'm not going to have the news of the day tonight, you know, and we probably won't get the facts for a couple of days anyway about what's really going on. People did kind of ask him if he would run as a Republican again if the opportunity ran, and he did not discount that. So that, I thought that was kind of interesting.
Vita just put in the chat that today it happened. It began over a week ago. So maybe when it comes to those things, we've been really out of the loop. I guess the bombing from Syria. They mentioned the bombing from Syria onto Israel. So it looks like Syria has been bombing Israel. Man, I've been staying too much in the United States current events, not really getting much information on that. Wow. Yeah, it's been a crazy week. I apologize not for being as up on that as I definitely would like to be. Well, if you'd like to call in and give us an update of that, I don't want to get too off topic tonight, but I do like to cover some current events. So if anyone has some information that Chris or I do not have about what's going on over in Israel, I know that's, and we'll talk a little bit on it, you know, and then get back to topic. Go ahead and call in. And area code 347-945-7428. Go ahead, Chris.
Well, it's an article right here, but if you want to get into it, whatever.
So we'll save it for someone calls in about it.
Sure, you bet. So anyway.
I know what that means, Chris. Go ahead.
What? Well, I just, you know, it's so hard to get decent news from any U.S. news source, period, on what's really happening internationally.
Well, I get the Irish Times on my phone. Maybe I'll check it out when I get a chance on that and see if that says anything.
Does that come with a tap?
No, I wish.
Do you have like a beer tap on your phone with that?
No, but I'm working on it now. Hey, I'm Irish. What can I say? Go ahead.
Yeah, so am I. I'm part Irish.
Well, I'm not all Irish, right? Yeah, I'm a mutt, but I'm Irish. Go ahead.
I'm probably more Celt, Scottish Celt than I am Irish. But
I see. I'm more American Indian, more Native American.
Well, this is kind of off topic, but my, you know, and my mom's side are what we would call raised, you know, in the U.S. in English, but or American, but they were mutt raised. And when my parents were in Ireland, they found out that her close family ties actually own a freaking castle in Scotland and told her to come back.
I've got
back
a friend in McCarthy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've actually, I got one of the books, you know, the castles, one of those castle books. They come back, I can open it up and go, look, my family owns a castle. Not that it means anything to me, but I probably could show up at a reunion and, you know, get drunk with the Scottish, you know, and wear a kilt and scream at the full moon if I wanted to. So,
well, see, I would never wear a kilt, but, you know, go ahead. We digress, Chris. We digress.
But, I, you know, I just, whatever.
I'll never wear
so
a kilt,
anyway,
Ron, let me pick that out.
Ron Paul, what a incredible speech. And not that he's a great orator, because he's not, and I don't mean any disrespect for him at all. It's just not. Some people are great orators, and some people aren't. But the content of the speech was powerful. And I didn't get a chance to. I listened to it. And then somebody had also put the transcript on the Liberty site, which was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Campaign for Liberty site.
I'm looking at that right now. Mm-hmm.
And I was able to copy that to a Word doc, and then I was trying to listen to his speech as I was going down through the document, highlighting things, because you know how that is when you're listening and reading at the same time or taking notes, how it embeds things in your mind. But I got about a part of the way done on that before I had to jump off and chase down Johnson. I never freaking enough time to do this stuff.
No, I tell you what, it's terrible. We have to eat and sleep, or else we would be able to get more done. Of course, not that I sleep much anyway, but.
Well, I think that what's going to happen is someday in the future that people will look back historically and go, there was one man that warned us for 30 flipping years what was coming. You know, his message was pretty simple. I mean, he gets into the financial thing, and sometimes he loses people because if you don't understand the difference between our money system and the Fed and printing money out of thin air and, you know, the Keynesian versus the Australian economics, and if you don't get into that and understand it.
Keynesian? Is that Keynesian or?
Yeah, Keynesian.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry, you never heard of Keynesian, but okay, good.
Yeah, that's just my Scottish take on it. But, you know, if you don't learn this stuff and educate yourself and you hear Ron Paul trying to explain it from a stage in a debate, it gets a little confusing because it's not something you can spit out in 30 seconds or less. It's something that requires, you know, a knowledge base. But it's coming. You know, he talks about that financial cliff. But anyway, we can do whatever. We can get right into this thing, read a couple paragraphs, talk about it, whatever you want to do.
Yeah, that sounds good. I've read parts of it, and you know, not in its entirety, but I have read some parts of it. It's pretty lengthy. I don't know how long the speech was, but
It's not that long, really. No, not if you look at it. I mean, ten pages with spacing, you know, so mm-hmm. It's not really that long if you condensed it. But I don't know. I felt like, I don't know. Can I read the first part? His intro.
Sure, go ahead.
I don't know why I haven't heard it. I just felt like it was well done. But you know, it was his farewell to Congress. He said this may well be the last time I speak on the House floor. At the end of the year, I'll leave Congress after 23 years in office over a 36-year period of time. My goals in 1976 were the same as they are today: promote peace and prosperity by strict adherence to the principles of individual liberty. It is my opinion that the course the U.S. embarked on in the latter part of the 20th century would bring us a major financial crisis and engulf us in a foreign policy that would overextend us and undermine our national security. To achieve the goals I sought, government would have to shrink in size and scope, reduce spending, change the monetary system, and reject the unsustainable costs of policing the world and expanding the American empire. The problem seemed to be overwhelming and impossible to solve, yet from my viewpoint, just following the constraints placed on the federal government by the Constitution would have been a good place to start.
Sounds like more like a constitutionalist, at least in that paragraph, than a libertarian, I must say.
Well, I would argue any day of the week, and I could prove it, that Ron Paul is more of a, you know,
Constitution Party
conservative constitutionalist necessarily than
right.
a libertarian. You know, he's more of a conservative libertarian. I mean,
right.
when I watched that video, that guy put together the six forms of libertarians or the six types. That guy put together, and he talked about why Ron Paul was able to coalesce, you know, across all spectrums of people. Because when you get down to when you look at the top of the Libertarian Party, they're probably more like people like me, you know, the paleo-libertarian, conservative, Ron Paul. I mean, a lot of people don't understand Ron Paul, but he is not for abortion. He's a Christian. He's socially conservative in a lot of ways in his life. He just doesn't think the federal government should be dictating these things, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I think that that's where people get a little bit confused with him. You know, since we decided to make the federal government, you know, the say-all, do-all in the morality of this country, we are losing the war because people don't understand that when you empower the federal government to solve your problems, whoever you pick to come in, you know, like let's say just like the Patriot Act with George Bush, we thought, well, George Bush is in there. He's a conservative. He's a Republican. He won't abuse this power. Well, he set everything in motion that Obama's used to steal our liberties. Bush set it up. Well, you know, the Patriot Act and the TSA and Homeland Security and all these mechanisms that he put in place for our safety, Benjamin Franklin said this a long time ago. When you give up a little bit of liberty for security, you're going to end up with neither or neither, depending on what side of the country you're from. Wake up. We stood back and cheered as Bush put in place the things that we now piss and moan about every day in the news of the day that Obama's doing. I'm like going, don't you get it? So when you get around people who are a little less about, you know, less the term neocon, hardcore militaristic conservatives, and you get a little bit more towards the libertarian model, you start seeing people going, well, I see both of them as the problem. And I think that's what you have in Ron Paul. Now, when you swing left and you start moving towards the libertine or the, you know, the rest of the libertarian, then you can start getting to a point where conservatives start freaking out a little bit about some of their ideals. So, you know, whatever that's worth, but here's the bottom line. You got to understand who they are to understand why they do what they do, you know, because the party's not going away. And just like you need to understand what a Republican is today versus the one you grew up with, because it ain't the same group.
That's true. It's not the
same group.
I was definitely a Reagan Republican, but the days of the Reagan Republican, at least in the upper echelon in the Republican Party, are days gone by.
Well, it's over since they, you know, ran Newt out. Come on. As soon as Newt left, you know, he did, you know, the balanced budget, and I know that's arguable that wasn't a true balanced budget, but it was the first time anybody had done anything like it. And you know, welfare reform, and actually, you know, paid down some debt and cut some government agencies and, you know, got some crap done. And, you know, by the strictest sense of the word, people could go, wow, it wasn't enough. Well, I'm thinking, yeah, but when was the last time anybody did it? Give the guy a break. But he leaves office, and then
Ron Paul remembers those days, right?
Yeah, when Newt left, what did the Republicans become? They became the Democrats of my youth. Their spending policies, everything.
And I think in that speech, there's a part in that speech that Ron Paul covered that when he asked about how much did I accomplish. You know,
that's the next section.
Right, it's the next part. I think that'd be a good because that's one thing that we heard a lot in the election when people are talking about Ron Paul is, you know, oh, well, what has he actually gotten accomplished? And I think, you know, if the Republicans would have stayed more towards what I would call the Newt Gingrich model instead of what we're seeing today, I think someone such as Ron Paul could have gotten more of what he would like to have seen accomplished.
Yeah, because what does Ron Paul want? Smaller government, less intrusion into the rest of the world, less using our military as our foreign policy negotiating arm. I mean, come on, people. You know, there's got to be a point where you just get this stuff figured out. Less taxes, returning power to the states. I mean, he talks about all these things too, you know. Where's the overreach of federal government? I mean, all the things, if Newt and Ron Paul would have both been in power together and working together, they would have probably got a lot more done. You know, I mean, I will never argue against Newt's ability to get things done because he's a player. He knows how to make things happen. He's a strategist. I think Ron Paul's biggest strength from my perspective studying him is his unwavering consistency on things, because he can retire and nobody can ever go, you took money from a lobbyist. No, you changed. Well, you voted on bills. You say you're a constitutionalist, but you voted on this bill, that bill, and that bill. No, 30 flipping years, nobody can ever look at him and say you compromised or took one for the team, Rick Santorum.
Right, and I remember during the primaries and when it was getting really near to the convention, I remember there were some folks who were, you know, kind of touting a Gingrich-Paul ticket, in which and Ron Paul, you know, Newt Gingrich-Ron Paul ticket, and there were some who were contending that would probably have been one of the most one of the most principled tickets that you've probably seen in a very long time, because both those gentlemen, and I'll talk about Newt Gingrich and Ron Paul, both stuck to their principles without wavering, unlike the folks that we've seen this past election.
Yeah, there aren't many like him. You know, there's not many like
him. At least not in the Republican and Democrat parties.
Like anywhere. Well, Constitution Party maybe.
Well, yeah, you know. That's what I'm saying. In the Constitution Party, that you definitely have folks such as, you know, Virgil Goode. He was like, look, you know, yes, I've been in a couple different parties, but he said, well, one thing that stands true is I've always stuck with conservatism, because whichever party I was in, it was about conservatism more so than it was about the party.
Well, you can argue saying. Those Southern Democrats were more conservative than the Republicans are, you know, at least from his era when he was a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what
definitely,
I mean?
So, yeah, definitely more conservative than what the Republicans are today, at least the Republicans that are in the power positions right now in the party, such as Boehner and Priebus.
Yeah, that's some sad stuff. One thing he did say, I got a kick out of him, he goes, no federal buildings or highways. You know, I didn't get any highways named after me, buildings named after me. And then he goes, thank God. In other words, he goes, I never wanted to be a crook. You know, the guy, one thing about, and I have not done an in-depth study on Ron Paul that I want to, because the Liberty Movement is just amazing to me, you know, from what it's, where it started to where it is today, the power that it has, and the power it's going to have in the future. Because,
well, do you think him leaving, you know, retiring is going to do well for the Liberty Movement?
Yeah, because he took right back over as the head of the Campaign for Liberty. The guy's been out. I don't know his full schedule because I'm not a Ron Paul guy, you know. But you know, I have to get focused on it and study it. But he's been speaking pretty consistently, you know, since the convention. So he's out there. He's in the colleges. He's continually moving forward. You know, the thing I want to say I think is really important is Ron Paul never really wanted to be a politician, number one. And number two, I don't think he really ever wanted to run for president. You know, I just think that he believed in what he was doing bad enough. And it's like that thing when you look in the mirror, you're going, crap, I'm the only one talking about this stuff. I have to do this.
Right. Well, yeah, and so we're believing it was more about him getting the message out, which obviously it did. It obviously did get out, especially after. And you know what? I mean, the Republicans have no one to think but themselves. Because they were a big part, in my opinion, for Ron Paul's, you know, vision to actually get out there more. Because what the Republican Party did in their quest, and I would call it such, just because all of what they've done, to silence them.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing to me. I mean, I saw stuff early on. That's where I started doing my research because I wasn't a Ron Paul guy. I didn't know anything about him. But when he would like win number two straw poll, or pretty much one main or whatever, you know, he'd come in. They would go, okay, well, number one, Bachman is number one in the poll. Number three is Gingrich or Santorum. Number four is Romney. They would skip his name. It's almost as if he didn't exist on the face of the earth, and he would be number two. I saw those little things, and so I started doing research, going, what the heck is this crap? I didn't think – Robert, call me naive, but I really didn't think that people could be that blatantly corrupt in our system. Because the idea to me, call me naive and an idealist, but my idea is you put your ideas out there honestly – And then here's my record, here's who I am, and you do some debates, and then people go, oh, you're my guy, and they vote for you, and then people vote on the facts. And what I've learned in this primary was that has nothing to do with politics in America, and it's a sad, sad thing.
No,
and I think that's why
the
voting numbers are so low.
Right,
but anyway.
People think that their vote really doesn't matter. It really doesn't count. Because, frankly, it's like, well, okay, well, all we're doing is voting in a bunch of crooks anyway.
Yeah.
You know
what's scary? You know what's
in a
scary?
Lot of ways, they're right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's scary. So, Ron Paul says, in spite of my efforts, the government has grown exponentially, taxes remain excessive, and the prolific increases in incomprehensible regulations continues. Wars are constant and pursued without congressional declaration. Deficits rise to the sky. Poverty is rampant, and dependency on federal government is now worse than any time in our history. All this with minimal concerns for the deficits and unfunded liabilities that common sense tells us cannot go on much longer. A grand but never mentioned bipartisan agreement allows for the well-kept secret that keeps the spending going. One side doesn't give up one penny on military spending. The other side doesn't give up any one penny on welfare spending, while both sides support the bailouts and subsidies for the banking and corporate elite. And the spending continues as the economy weakens and the downward spiral continues. As the government continues fiddling around, our liberties and our wealth burn in the flames of a foreign policy that makes us less safe. A major stumbling block to the real change in Washington is a total resisting to admitting that the country is broke. That has made compromising just to agree to increase spending inevitable, since neither side has any intention of cutting spending. It's a great speech.
Right.
You know, I just.
Well, and then when they talk about cutting spending, they're not actually cutting spending. Now, when they say, oh, well, this is a spending cut, they'll just talk about cutting the increase of spending. So let's say they're going to increase spending by 20%. Well, we'll just increase spending by 10% next year. So we cut spending by 10%. No, you didn't. You raised spending by 10%.
And that's what they call cutting spend. Yeah, Newt talks about baseline calculations, that we leave out other components of real costs in the country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all that stuff has to be redone. Here's the problem. Not one of these – oh, God, I can't say the word that's in my mind. Not one of these people that we vote in are willing to talk about this stuff. Newt was. Palin does. I'm sure there's a few congressmen. I'm sure people would call me up and go, hey, Alan West does. But, you know, whatever. But, you know, in terms of really name-brand people – Paul talks about it, talks about the abuse of the Constitution, talks about the overreach of government. You know, Virgil Good talks about it. It's a minority of people, and yet this was the foundation that our country was built on. And here's the thing that people don't understand.
Yeah,
because
think about that.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I know. Well, he gets into it later on, you know, when he talks about our liberty. I mean, this guy's been fighting for our liberty for 36 years. And he doesn't fight for our liberty saying – you know, like driving the argument with, you know, with legalized pot. That's not Ron Paul, okay? He talks about our liberties are being stolen because of our economic system, that the totalitarianism and what we are facing today comes from the fact that we have a thing called the Federal Reserve, which is neither federal or has any reserve, as Rex loves to point out.
Right.
It is a system of printing money out of thin air. And then that money is expanded. It's lent to banking institutes, and then they take that same $100 or million or billion or trillion dollars, and then they expand it out multiple times out of thin air and lend it and invest it and take risk with it. And then they take all those loans and they bundle them together, and then they sell off all those bundled loans in investment schemes and strategies. And it's all based on nothing. That's what people don't understand. That is the Fed. The Federal Reserve is not a government institute. It is not controlled by the government. And they print money. They do insane things. There's trillions of dollars we don't even know who they lend it to, that we found out through a leak in the European investment, something like $15 trillion. And that's our money, people, that we – in other words, no, it's not really ours, but it really is ours, and we have to pay for it. It is a tax system. The value of the dollar up until right before this election was 98% less than it was when the Fed started. What do you think is going to happen with $800 billion was printed? QE1, 2, and 3. QE3 is an unlimited $40 billion a month printed and lent to banks at almost no interest to buy up the mortgage-backed dollars. And that's a long, complex conversation. But it's insanity is what it is. And nobody believes it's going to work, and they're doing it anyway. And Gary Johnson said it tonight. He said, you know, somebody asked him a question about what does Obama need to do, and he said it has nothing to do with what he needs to do. He is not going to do anything to balance a budget or cut anything. His vision and long-term goal has nothing to do with fixing this problem. Here's the other problem. For all you Republicans that hate Obama, Boehner and his crew have done nothing to stop this. And they will turn around and hand him his debt ceiling increase in January.
And
they allow all this crap to happen. They're going to do nothing to stop it. So you got to quit thinking Republican and Democrat if you want a solution, because it ain't going to happen, folks.
And as you put it, it hasn't been happening.
Well, we're off the cliff if you talk to constitutionalists. We're not running up to the cliff. We ran up to the cliff, and we're leaning over it when we had the crash. And we had one of two ways we could have gone, and we went the wrong way. Four times. Bailouts, well, TARP, bailouts, QE1, QE2, and QE3. That's five components. You ready to move to Costa Rica?
Not kidding. I'm moving to Ireland now.
It's cold and wet in Ireland, my friend. If you haven't lived in, I lived in Southeast Alaska. You better learn to start drinking more.
Well, you know, I guess you got to aspire to something.
Yeah.
I like Guinness, so you know. No, but I digress. So, and then,
nothing digressive there.
Yeah. No, but you know, looking over, as I said, you know, over the speech of going for, he talked about new more isms. That's what the pilot's looking at now.
Where are you at?
I am on no more isms. But if we would like to just go, because you were talking about QE2, QE3, and he talks about it here, you know, and this is from his speech, this continuous move is no different than what we've seen, and this is from Ron Paul's speech, seen in how our financial crisis of 2008 was handled. Congress first directed, with bipartisan support, bailouts for the wealthy. Then it was the Federal Reserve with its endless quantitative easing. If at first it doesn't succeed, try again. QE1, QE2, and QE3. And with no results, we try QE3 indefinitely. And that until it fails and two fails. There's a cost to all this, and let me assure you, delaying the payment is no longer an option. The rules of the market will exact its pound of flesh, and it won't be pretty. Well, that sounds like I've never heard him talk like that before. You know. So, but it is a
thing. Where
just,
you were at.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Go ahead.
Yes, and then about two paragraphs down. It says, everyone claims support for freedom, but too often it's for one's own freedom and not for others. Too many believe that there must be limits on freedom. They argue that freedom must be directed and managed to achieve fairness and equity, thus making it acceptable to curtail through force certain liberties. Some decide what and whose freedoms are to be limited. These are the politicians whose goal is life is power. Their success depends on gaining support from special interests.
Oh, he's nailing the whole system. This all started with the Fed. I mean, and I hope, and I really think that, you know, that's some shows that we really need to do, is really getting people to understand. And it wasn't just the formation of the Fed. And then Rex talks about, you know, you can listen to the guy, Jekyll Island, you know, the guy that did the book. I mean, you can go online and listen to the speech. You can read. You can study this stuff. And I think it's one of those things where some people will do it. Other people need a show to be involved in, whether listening and following and learning together. And that's fine, because I'm all game on doing this stuff, because a lot of people don't understand, but there were several events that occurred before the Fed was formed that led up to it. There were some manipulations that led up to the Fed. There were some people involved. Oh, and by the way, a lot of them were Republicans, by the way, just so in case you're wondering. sorry, I just had to throw that in there. But, you know, it all started with the Civil War. Civil War changed the nature of states' independent sovereignty.
Mm-hmm.
And then that allowed, well, the problem was is the war debt was so flipping huge. You know, you got to figure that, you know, the mid to late 1800s, we were still struggling. You get up towards the end of the 1800s, 1871, the Organic Act that created this corporation around Washington, D.C., and you got to dig into this stuff to find out why they did what they did and what that really meant, what they did, because a lot of it had to do with how they managed the debt of the nation and some of these moves that they made. When you rolled off the end of the turn of the century in the early 1900s, there was a blip in the market. Well, a lot of people say that was an actual planned event, because that set a freak out in the market, which allowed for them to come in and sell this Fed concept. And when you get into this history of this, you're like, this is some serious I spy crap. You know, some manipulation of events. Because right after the Fed, they had to do something to make sure that the Fed got its money. And that, what was that? Income tax. And there was something else they had to do. They had to make sure that the senators, which used to be appointed by the states, by the power of the states, were now became popular votes. So now they were controlled more of their power in the federal government versus being accountable to the states that they represented. Because once they did that, then they could pull that whole operation into a federal game and take the power away from the states and the people, and then they could start down that road to nationalizing our country. I mean, you got to go, wow, when you read this stuff and you finally get your head wrapped around it. What we live in today is a byproduct of that plan of men who are no longer alive, but they set it in motion. So you got this one lone congressman that everybody calls a kook, a nutcase, whatever.
Right.
And when you study what he's been teaching and you take the time and you put away your prejudice and your bigotry and you study what he's been teaching and you get around people like the Constitution Party and Randy and the people that, you know, we've been interviewing, you start putting this stuff together, you're going, these are the last of the true patriots. These are the people that are founding fathers, you know, when they set this country in motion and the way they put the government together, the mm-hmm. separation of powers, the checks and balances, both lateral and horizontal checks and balances between federal government, between, you know, the president, Congress, and the judicial, and then coming down between the federal, the state, and the sovereign people. All these checks and balances systems were set in place to prevent what we are living right now. And the Fed and the income tax, the 16th, 17th Amendment, was a direct counter to that, spin off of some things that happened after the Civil War, to actually break that power, because we are no longer living in that system that our founding fathers put together, that optimized maximum freedom of liberty.
Well, and
it's just amazing. Go ahead.
I'm moving down, and I'm moving down the transcripts here under the heading "No More Isms." He talks about that. You know, it says the great news, because you know how I always talk about solutions. Okay, we got these problems. Now, what's some solutions here? And I think, you know, this summarizes it. The great news is the answer is not to be found in more isms. The answers are to be found in more liberty, which costs so much less. Under these circumstances, spending goes down, wealth production goes up, and the quality of life improves. Just this recognition, especially if we move in this direction, increases optimism, which in itself is beneficial. you know, the following through with sound policies are required, which must be understood and supported by the people. But there is good evidence that the generation coming of age at the present time is supportive of moving in a direction of more liberty and self-reliance. And this change in direction and the solution become known, and the quicker the return of optimism. And he talks about the change. What I think, he might not particularly be talking about, the change we're talking about, maybe with the ending of the duopoly. But I think that's a direction we need to go for. And then I'm going to continue down where I wanted to leave. I'm going to skip the paragraph. It said, he talked about it works. I guess I'll read this paragraph before it. Because it segues into it. Our job for those of us who believe that a different system than the one we have had for the last 100 years has driven us to this unsustainable crisis is to be more convincing that there is a wonderful, uncomplicated, and moral system that provides the answers. We had a taste of it in our early history. We need not give up on the notion of an advance of this cause. It worked, but we allowed our leaders to concentrate on the material abundance that freedom generates while ignoring freedom itself. Now we have neither, but the door is open out of necessity for an answer. The answer available is based on the Constitution, individual liberty, and prohibiting the use of government force to provide privileges and benefits to all special interests. And right now, this is my opinion. I'm not saying this is what Ron Paul's saying. But right now, in my mind, the Republican and the Democrat Party could be considered in this, as a special interest groups.
Oh, yeah, because I don't care. you can scream all day long at the unions and people on welfare and all those people who vote for Obama. You know what I mean? And the green companies. Well, then you come right over here, and we got the same batch. We've got the trade deals that are taking our jobs and our creativity and our manufacturing overseas. All these different trade deals. I mean, we could do a couple shows just on these trade deals and expose how they have totally stripped our country of its manufacturing. Not totally stripped, but you know what I'm saying.
Right.
How those things were set in place. Crony capitalism is no different than crony unionism. But for some reason, Republicans think it's okay.
Taking money away from the people and giving it to somebody else.
Yeah. So whether it's Romney and Bain Capital and all the deals that dummy like me was able to actually investigate and see that he got bailout money and made money off the bailout of the auto industry that he likes to beat Obama up for. And, don't get me started on Romney, but that whole group, that's the same welfare to corporations that Fox News loves to beat up on Obama every day of the week about his bad green deals and, GE. And, it's both sides, folks. And it's destroying
right.
our system.
And then
you're paying for it.
And that's an unpopular stance. I know a lot of people are very loyal to both the Republicans and the Democrat parties. But one thing I like to point out is look where we're at, look where the nation is at, where America's at, and then you've heard me say this many times before, Chris, but, I want to emphasize it and reiterate it, is, if you keep doing what you've always done, you're always going to have what you've already got. So if we keep on in this direction, as Ron Paul states, we're going to continually go and be where we're already at, if not worse, and probably worse. So it's going to take, a change. And at least for me, I think the change is to get rid of the duopoly and maybe move to a multi-party system. Now, I know many folks are like, oh, well, that's un-American. America's a two-party system. Well, look what the two-party system has done for us. Is it not time to change so that there could be more competition, which can get rid of, in my opinion, a lot of the corruption? Because, look what monopolies do you know, and the duopoly just, you know, isn't any better. The only thing the duopoly does is make you feel, make you believe, in my opinion, falsely, especially at this point in time in American politics, falsely believe that you have a choice when you really don't. I mean, yeah. for how many election cycles now, Chris, especially for the presidential elections, have you heard, oh, well, we got to vote for the lesser of the two evils?
Since Reagan?
Yeah. Probably since Reagan, and that's, Reagan was, you know, 88, so we've got, you know, 24 years ago. That's a generation.
Wow.
A generation ago.
Well, listen to this, something he says right here. After over 100 years, we face a society quite different from the one that was intended by our founders. In many ways, their efforts to protect future generations with the Constitution from this danger has failed. Skeptics at the time the Constitution was written in 1787, which would be the Anti-Federalists, warned us of today's possible outcome. The insidious nature of the erosion of our liberties and the reassurance of great abundance allowed the process to evolve into the dangerous period in which we now live. Rock and roll, keep rolling, pick a spot. And now he's actually getting into some bullet points. Dependency on government largesse.
Yep, it says, today we face a dependency on government largesse for almost every need. Our liberties are restricted and government operates outside the rule of law, protecting and rewarding those who buy or coerce government into satisfying their demands. Here are a few examples. Undeclared wars are commonplace. That's something the Constitution Party talks about all the time. Welfare for the rich and poor is considered an entitlement. Let's break this down, the things we've been saying. This past election, you had a welfare socialist, is the way I'd call it, and then you had a corporate welfare, corporatist in Romney. So either way, it was still taking the money from, you know, the middle class and giving it to another subset. One, either giving it to what some would say poor, and then the other, the rich and the corporations. And then the next bullet point, the economy is overregulated, overtaxed, and grossly distorted by a deeply flawed monetary system. Now, I know that's something you're probably going to want to chime in on about that one, Chris.
Go ahead and read your bullets. I'll come back to them.
Okay. You'll come back to that after we're done reading through the rest of them. The debt is growing exponentially. We've seen that. And either one of the two candidates, whether it was Romney or Obama, looked like they were really going to address the budget. The Patriot Act and FISA legislation, passed without much debate, have recently resulted in a steady erosion of our Fourth Amendment rights. And as people have pointed out that, you know, these things are passed by both the Republicans and the Democrats. So where's the difference there? He goes on, next bullet point. Tragically, our government engages in preemptive war, otherwise known as aggression, with no complaints from the American people. Then the next one, the drone warfare we are pursuing worldwide is destined to end badly for us as the hatred builds for innocent lives lost and the international laws flawed. We are financially weakened and militarily challenged. There will be a lot of resentment thrown our way. That's one of the things that I don't really agree a lot with Ron Paul. Unfortunately, in any combat, there's collateral damage. Now, here's the thing, and this, I personally, I'd rather see us have an unmanned drone and have the loss of American lives, American soldiers' lives, having boots on the ground.
I don't think that's what they're saying. Right, but I don't think that's what they're saying. Remember when Randy got on that because Johnson was taking that position. I think what the thing, Randy said it so well, it's not the technology, it's the misuse of the constitutional issue of the technology.
Well,
that's the important part. In other words, if you have a legal war and you go, I'm at war with this country, and Congress and the people decide that we are at war, and it's laid out, and you go to war and you win, and then you come home, that's one thing. But what we're doing, where we're sliding in and out of other countries that we're not supposed to be in and blowing people up here and there and crossing lines and pissing people off, that, you know, like, what the hell are you doing blowing up people in my country for? Whether or not we, you know, in other words, we're at this war on terror regardless of other countries' sovereignty, and that's the issue that they're talking about. And you've heard Clymer and Virgil Gude on this too. I think that's what they're saying more. At least that's the way I read it. So, I mean, not to argue that point, but I think, you know, I don't think that anybody has a problem with the drone. We've been dropping bombs for a long time. I mean, come on, man. We used to shoot, you know, balls out of cannons, at, you know, when the ball hit the ground. Once they were able to make an exploding ball, they were rocking. We've always had collateral damage. I don't think that's what they're saying so much.
Well, and then I wish he would have elaborated more about the international law flaunted. Okay, you know, I wish you would elaborate it more on that. Now, I see where he's talking about financially. Yeah, I'll call Ron Paul. I got it. Now, while I have the green phone for Obama, I have
We could be on this bullet all night. We can come back to this one.
Okay. I was going to mention my other colored phone for... You know,
I bet you we could get him
for Ron Paul.
I bet you we could get him on here one day.
Perhaps. I knew someone the other day was talking about trying to get Newt Gingrich on here, but we'll see. You know, we're talking about something I don't know if Newt Gingrich would be too into. I don't think he'd be very supportive of some of the things. You know, unfortunately, because I mean, I still support Newt Gingrich in a lot of ways. I just don't think he'd be as interested in some of the things we're talking about, just because, you know, he is such a party loyalist. I mean, I understand the reasons behind that, but, you know, I haven't built a lifetime, you know, a career in the Republican Party. And I'm not saying for Newt Gingrich it's all about career, but anyway, I digress. We'll go to the next bullet point. It's now the law of the land that the military can arrest American citizens, hold them indefinitely without charge or trial. Well, I know we've talked about this at length, Chris, and, you know, not just you and I, but other folks in the show who's come on. But we hear about this all the time, and I'm going to play devil's advocate here for a second, because that's just sometimes the role I play on this show, is because I like to show, you know, I like to look at all the sides, you know, not just the sides we may agree on. But I like to look at all. But I've never heard any, and, you know, inform me if you have any examples of American citizens who have been held indefinitely without charges or a trial. I have not heard of any incidences, truly. I've never truly heard any incidences of that happening. Have you?
Beats me.
I mean, people talk about it all the time.
I'm trying to see the bullet. All right. Now the law of the land that can arrest American citizens, hold them indefinitely. What? You don't know what NDAA is?
Well, I know what NDAA is. Still in some intelligence.
Because we haven't done it and we haven't implemented it yet on somebody? Is that what you're saying? I'm trying to get a beat on your mindset.
Well, what I'm saying by show, you know, as I said, playing devil's advocate here, is, you know, but that's what I'm saying, but you're going to hear that. You were going to hear folks say, you know, give me some examples of this happening. And because, well, I'm talking about the supporters of NDAA. They'll be like, well, where have you seen where an American citizen has been held indefinitely without charges or a trial? Where does that happen?
Second World War.
Well, they're talking about from the NDAA.
Well, it's the same concept, Rob. It's the same concept.
I mean, it's the Constitution. It's simple. They're violating your rights. That whole program, I mean, we got constitutional scholars and constitutional attorneys filing charges over this.
Well,
they have overstepped their bounds. I mean, it isn't a matter of when have I seen it happen. I mean, how do you know it hasn't happened? I mean, we have people, anyway, don't get me started because I don't want to talk about stuff I have knowledge of that I shouldn't be talking about. Just because I know people in the military. I can't talk about that. Let's move on.
Time to pull it out with you, Chris. No, I'm just kidding. We'll move on to the next bullet point.
The bottom line is that you're violating the Constitution. You're violating people's civil rights, and you're setting it up for them to do anything.
Understood. But wouldn't if this? Well, one way for. One way to get rid of the NDAA, would it be that for an incident to actually happen where an American citizen is held and, you know, without any charges or held indefinitely, then the person can bring that up to the Supreme Court to contest its constitutionality?
I don't know. If they're held indefinitely without charges, how in the hell can they bring it up?
Well, but I'm saying after the fact when they're finally let
How about if we quit letting the government create unconstitutional bills?
I'm talking about a scenario here, Chris. I'm talking about a scenario
okay,
in which
well, we're gonna
the
be on
constitutionality of it could be challenged. Well, okay, well. Yeah, and there's a lot of them, as you pointed out.
It's not a question of it being constitutional or not. You've been on the same programs I have for the last month and a half. Randy gets into this. Good gets into it. Clymer,
I'm not contesting it, but what I'm saying is would that not be an incident in which it could be brought between brought in front of the Supreme Court so that its constitutionality can be contested.
It's being contested as it is now. I mean, there was that court case that was going on. The fact that these people are willing to do this tells you that, I mean, this is what the whole Ron Paul speech, what we're talking about, and his methodology or his belief structure is that we're stepping across the lines of the Constitution. And he's just bulleting these out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, each one of these you could get into for an hour. We've ate up an hour and we're halfway through.
Oh, not even halfway.
We can roll quicker if we get off this point.
yeah. Give me the rhino chalk now. Yeah, leave the baby elephants alone. Eat the rhino. Now leave the
rhino
alone too, yeah. But no, I'm talking about Republican rhinos, not the animal. But anyway, there's rampant hostility towards free trade is supported by a large number in Washington.
Yeah, because all these trade deals are not free trade deals. They are corporatism. They are corporate welfare.
Multinational corporations.
Trade.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is, I love it when Virgil Goode, I wish we could get him on, you know, for where we could just focus on this topic. We've only lifted the lid a little bit on that.
Well, maybe one day we will, but maybe next time he's on, we can bring it up to him, so.
But that's what
I'm actually
saying,
due to call him in about a week,
too.
So.
Right. Well, go ahead. The next bullet point is saying the same thing.
Right. Well, yeah, it's the supporters of sanctions, currency manipulation, which we know China is doing. And WTO
Isn't that what the Fed is doing?
What, currency manipulation?
Yeah. When you print $800 billion and throw it on the market and you devalue money by 25%, isn't that currency manipulation?
Sure, but as I was pointing out, this is, you know, China as well, so...
China. It's our country doing it too. It's amazing that nobody brought that up in the debates. QE1, QE2, QE3, print $40 billion a month out of thin air, buy mortgage-backed securities, buy up all the land.
That came up briefly. That came up. That didn't even come up in the third party debates much, did it? No. I mean, it came up on Bard's logic. I know that, but
the last debate, the Nader debate, where they really got into stuff, was such a fiasco with the technology. I still haven't heard the whole dang debate.
I watched it, and I don't remember them saying much, and I've taken some notes off to go and look back at it, but I don't remember them saying a lot about, QE3 and things of that nature.
No, we've probably pulled, well, I don't know about the last
one. We've talked a lot more about it than any other place that I know of. So,
yeah,
folks,
because,
if you're listening to the show, either live or on the archives, and you are curious about those other conversations on QE3, you definitely can find those in the archives. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, no problem. I'll just get through these bullets, and then we can roll.
Yeah, because after the bullets is questions that he's got here. Sanctions are used to punish countries that don't follow our orders.
Yeah, no kidding.
Okay,
you're fine.
And that's another one, I would like to talk about at length at some point. And this is bailouts that guarantee for all kinds of misbehavior are routine.
Yep.
And that point I agree with. The sanctions one I really don't agree with much, and we can get into more on that later. So central economic planning through monetary policy, regulations, and legislative mandates has been an acceptable policy, and that's the end of those bullet points.
Yeah, that's basically interfering with the economy at every given point in time to manipulate the economy, to lift it, to drop it, to increase it, to stimulate it, to back it off. We used to have 15, 20 years between our economic crash cycles. It's accelerating because everything's moving faster. So, that's his whole, that's the whole concept of, really it stems back to the Fed. So, there's a lot, but, we miss the content of this because we stopped so many times in the middle of it, so it kind of gets a little confusing, but.
And there's a lot here. If you look at it to go over, that's definitely we're trying to cover the speech with analysis and detail, period of time, which could take definitely a couple shows to go over. Because each one of these points could be its own show. It could be its own episode.
Well, he has 36 years of fighting over this stuff. 36 years he's been battling these issues. Anyway. Excessive government has created such a mess it prompts many questions. Are sick people who use medical marijuana put in prison? Why are sick people? Why does the federal government restrict the drinking of raw milk? Why can't Americans manufacture rope and other products from hemp, Robert?
Right. That's
why are
that,
people
that's
not allowed to
me.
Use gold and? Why are Americans not allowed to use gold and silver as legal tender as mandated by the Constitution? Why is Germany concerned enough to consider repatriating their gold held by the Fed? In other words, they don't trust our system. Why do our political leaders believe it is unnecessary to thoroughly audit our own gold? Hello, Americans. Why can't Americans decide which type of light bulbs they can buy? Why is the TSA permitted to abuse the rights of Americans traveling by air? Why should there be mandatory sentences, even up to life of crimes, without victims, as our drug laws require? That's an interesting point. Why have we allowed the federal government to regulate commodes in our homes? I know I get questions like this go through my mind. On and on and on. Why does Congress willingly give up its prerogative to the executive branch? Hello, Boehner. Why does the changing party in power? He's corrupt. Why does changing the party in power never? Let me try it again. Why does changing the party in power never change policy? Hello? Why did the big banks, the large corporations and foreign banks and foreign central banks get bailed out in 2008 and the middle class lost their jobs and their homes? Why do so many in the government and the federal offices believe that creating money out of thin air creates wealth? Hello? It only creates wealth because you pass it on to people and then they end up paying it back. Hello? Oh, brother, you can get into this stuff. Why do so many accept the deeply flawed principle that government, bureaucrats, and politicians can protect us? from ourselves without.
Well, Chris, one of the questions, there was an answer here that's been talked about at length during this, on this discussion as well as other discussions we've had, especially during the election and even in the primaries, is when the question, why does changing the party in power never change policy? There's an answer here that I said we've talked about at length. Could it be that the views of both parties are essentially the same?
Yeah, I agree. So, I mean, 100%. I don't see any differences. You know, I see that, you know, the left tends to swing towards, you know, towards the impoverished and the unions, but they still play the same corporate deals, and they act like they care about the environment.
The liberals have definitely hijacked the environmental movement.
Yeah, they perverted it. Okay, where was that?
Let me get back to the transcripts because I was on something else here.
I should have changed this to numbers because I've lost my bullet and moved around. Took my eyes off of it. But it goes on and on.
Oh, yeah, there's a bunch of other questions on there, right?
I mean, just the bullet questions are so key. You know, why did we ever give the government a safe haven for initiating violence against all people? You know, that all has to do with the Patriot Act, you know, the aggression in our military, our in-country police forces. Why do some members defend civil liberties but not free markets? Aren't they the same? Oh, man, this is some deep stuff, you know. And it just goes on and on and on. And, of course, people can read the transcript. But let's roll off the bullets because we could go down through each bullet and talk about it, you know. But his last bullet, is there any explanation for all the deception, the unhappiness, the fear of the future, the lost confidence in our leaders, the distrust, the anger, and the frustration? Yes, there is, and there is a way to reverse these attitudes. The negative perceptions are logical and a consequence of bad policies bringing about our problems. Identification of the problems and recognizing the cause allow the proper changes to come easy. And then he gets into his liberty talk. Trust yourself, not the government. You want to read that?
No, I'm just kidding, Chris. No, and actually, and that's something that we talk about a lot, you know, on the show. And not only just, you know, trust yourself and not the, when it comes to trust yourself and not the government, we've also talked about a lot with doing your own research and trust the information you find instead of information you get in places such as, you know, the mainstream media and even the so-called conservative media. Of course, you got to always be careful of where the source is, and even you might have to research the source, you know, when you do the information. So, and one way to research the source here on Bard's Logic for what we've got going on here is, you know, look at the consistency in the archives. I mean, you will find a consistency of conservatism in these topics when in all the archives that you'll see on the or listen to on the shows, starting from the very beginning up until this show. But then I'll go ahead and read these couple of paragraphs. I just want to add that in because I think it was relevant. But under the trust yourself and not the government, it says, too many people have for too long placed too much confidence and trust in government and not enough in themselves. Fortunately, many are now becoming aware of the seriousness of the gross mistakes of the past several decades. The blame is shared by both political parties. Many Americans are now demanding to hear the plain truth of things and want the demagoguing to stop. Without this first step, solutions are impossible. Seeking the truth and finding the answers in liberty and self-reliance promotes the optimism necessary for restoring prosperity. The task is not that difficult if politics doesn't get in the way. We have allowed ourselves to get into such a mess for various reasons. Politicians deceive themselves as to how wealth is produced. Excessive confidence is placed in the judgment of politicians and bureaucrats. This replaces the confidence in a free society. Too many in high places of authority became convinced that that only they, armed with the arbitrary government power, can bring about fairness while facilitating wealth production. This always proves to be a utopian dream and destroys wealth and liberty. It impoverishes the people and rewards the special interests. But that's a common theme that we're hearing here, is him railing against the special interests. Who end up controlling both political parties. It's no surprise that much of what goes on in Washington is driven by aggressive partisanship and power steering, with philosophic differences being minor. That's a whole heck of a lot to say right there. And I find, I'm just thinking, wow, how he's railing on both parties here in this speech, and this was in front of Congress. I can only imagine what the faces of those people who are in there listening to this speech and seeing the video of this would have to be fascinating.
I had mute on. No wonder I couldn't get my word in.
Ha!
Here's the thing. Okay. This is really important to understand this. And in other words, you can go through that whole, all those bullet points, that we kind of skipped over. We kind of skipped some of them, got kind of in depth on a couple of them. But if you go through and I posted the link in there so people can pull up the transcript, and I posted the speech because it's kind of neat reading the transcript as he's speaking. But here's the key. When they created the Fed and the income tax, that allowed them to do all these things that Ron Paul rails against. When you talk about special interests are defined by either money given to them, or tax breaks and loopholes. That is an IRS manipulation. So the lobbyists come in and they say, hey, we want to advance this technology because, everybody's all worried about the environment, so we want to put these light bulbs out, but God, they're going to be really expensive, so we need help in manufacturing, we need to build a new factory, we need to tool, and then we need to sell it, and it's going to be too expensive, nobody's going to want to buy it, so we need some new laws, and we need a break, and people probably need a good rebate, and that's how it all happens. Times that by about 1 million, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 million things, 10 million, 20 million things going on in your country at any given time, and you have what we're dealing with. And these constitutional-minded people like Paul or Virgil Goode or whoever, or even Gary Johnson in this mindset, is eliminate that system, because that system is what allows for the corruption. If you get rid of the IRS and you go to some kind of flat tax or fair tax mm-hmm. or some kind of a system, right, and you eliminate that manipulation game, 76,000 pages long IRS code. Did you hear that? 76,000 pages. You eliminate that. Then you eliminate, right off the bat, lobbyists go right out the door because they're no longer there looking for all those manipulation schemes that are typically, including Mr. 1% Romney. I have articles that show all of the tax breaks and deals that they manipulated along the way as they were loading companies up with debt before they sold them off, and how they manipulated the government, either a local mm-hmm. tax or a federal or some kind of a bailout game. They do this all the time. You break that system. Here's the problem. None of that is free enterprise. Let me say this again. None of that is free enterprise. So when I get all these liberals, like the ones that came on the other night, and they want to get all against, Republicans because we're free enterprise, none of this has anything to do with what, in my heart and mind, free enterprise in this country is about. This is no different than what the unions do on the other side. So I'm not making excuses for the Republicans on this. It's both wrong. Eliminate the system that allows the corruption. That's what Dr. Paul's been teaching for 36 flipping years. That's what Virgil Goode has stood on.
Well, two things. One, you know, I liked what Roger Good was actually talking about, not fully bringing back the barter system, but he did talk some about the barter system, which I thought was fascinating and definitely deserves more looking into. I'm not saying, of course, that would be – we go back to that system fully, but it does bring up some interesting prospects. Of course, you know, because of the tax system, current tax system now, where they just want to try to, you know, get money from you at every turn, hand over fist. So, you know, that's something that, you know, and that since it can't be regulated as much, something the federal government wouldn't be interested in at this time. But also, I had a discussion some years ago with a friend of mine who was a fellow environmentalist, but he was more of a liberal than I, is about a consumption tax. Now, one of the things, reason why I would support, you know, some sort of consumption tax is that for those who are conservationists, I think it could, you know, conservationist-minded, is that, you know, the more you reuse, you know, items, thus the less you consume, which is, of course, better for the environment, then the less you're going to be paying in taxes as well. So it kind of, you know, doubles up on that. And that would actually be a tax system in which a lot of conservationists, I think, could come on board to.
I don't even know how to respond to that. I don't, because number one, the consumption tax, the fair tax, there's a lot of things that I still don't understand about it. Mm-hmm. You know, Virgil Good made some comments about that he disagrees with the way that some people are talking about it, because he spent years looking at all the different, you know, variable programs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I don't, you know, I'm not even going to get into that because I have no idea. You know, what I've heard what Gary Johnson said, I heard what Virgil Good. In fact, they got into kind of a cross discussion at the last debate over
right.
it. And Virgil Good actually, you know, showed Gary why Virgil was leaning towards a different system, because it broadened the base. And because if you have too high of a concentration of a tax at the top on new items, then you have your whole economy trying to figure out ways to undercut it. You know what I mean? So I don't even know. I don't know how anybody could tie this to environmental issues, but maybe they could. I don't know. I'm not that smart.
Well, I touched upon it, but that's so, something we can talk about later. What, you know, when we come back to Green Thursday.
Yeah, I just, you know. Yeah, we'll see. I think we need more data. You know, depends on the environmentalist, because a lot of environmentalists who claim they're environmentalists really want you to buy a whole bunch of products that somebody else makes. So, you know, I don't know. You get, like I said, that just is a weird one to me. GE wants you to buy their light bulb. They're being environmentalists. Right.
No, they just want you to, they're not being environmentalists. They just want you to buy their product. There's a difference. Just like
I cannot believe. I can't believe that Republicans actually voted for that stupid bill. You know how expensive them damn light bulbs are? I just couldn't believe it. It was just mind-boggling. Republicans voted for that, right? That's the only way it passed, right?
Well, I'm typing to someone, so I missed that.
That light bulb that we are being forced to use.
Well, I think that's been taken back. I don't think, you know, they're going to be forcing us to buy this kind of light bulbs anymore.
It's been reversed.
Yes, I believe so. Yeah, I think it's been reversed.
Well,
yeah, I'll have to look more into
moved,
it, but I believe
those factories moved overseas.
That I don't know of, Chris.
Yeah, they shut down factories. Anyway, here, let me read some while you're typing. Where are we at?
Okay.
Economic ignorance. Well, and you said earlier up in the upper bullet, you were saying, you know, about the economic situation and everything. That the reason I didn't dive into that bullet was because I pretty much said it all anyway. And that all has to do with our, you know, the Fed and you know, bailouts and QE1 to QE infinity. Economic ignorance. Economic ignorance is commonplace. Keynesianism, I don't know why he added that ism on the end of it, continues to thrive, although today is facing healthy and enthusiastic rebuttals. In other words, people are finally waking up to the Fed. Believers in military Keynesianism. Thank you.
You are welcome.
Continues to desperately promote their failed policies as the economy languishes in a deep slumber. Supporters of all government edicts use humanitarian arguments to justify them. True. Whether it's environmental, whether it's whatever, you know, the poor, whatever. Humanitarian arguments are always used to justify government mandates related to economy, monetary policy, foreign policy, and personal liberty. This is on purpose to make it more difficult to challenge. But initiating violence for humanitarian reasons is still violence. Good intentions are no excuse and are just as harmful as when people are used force to bad intentions. The results are always negative. So basically, you know, he talks about, you know, he really gets into the overuse of government in every facet of our lives, you know, and laws and everything else. And, you know, there's a whole section on that. Here's a good one right here.
Yeah, I got to scroll down to the proliferation of federal crimes.
Yep.
That's where you're at, right?
Yeah, I just kind of rolled over the whole, because there's a whole section in there, you know, on violence and federal violence and TSA, CIA, FBI, Fish and Wildlife, FEMA, IRS. You know, he's talking about, you know, government control, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, citizens are guilty until proven innocent in an unconstitutional administrative courts. You know, he really gets into that whole concept, which we talk about all the time. So I didn't want to, you know, get caught up in that. You know, that has all, you know, evolved since 9/11. So proliferation of federal crime. You want to read it?
Well, we are at the 11:30, and we still got much to do. If we want to go through that quickly, because what he has next is definitely something I want to cover before the end of the show, and that is the achieving liberty. I really want to definitely touch that.
Where we at?
What I'd like to
go
do, since there's limited of time, is skip over to that. Since liberty can only be achieved when government is denied the aggressive use of force. And taxes can be seen as aggressive use of force in my mind.
Yep.
If one seeks liberty, a precise type of government is needed. To achieve it, more than lip service is required. Two choices are available. A government designed to protect liberty, a natural right, and we've talked about that, as its sole objective. The people are expected to care for themselves and reject the use of any force for interfering with another person's liberty. Government is given a strictly limited authority to enforce contracts, property ownership, settle disputes, and defend against foreign aggression. Two, a government that pretends to protect liberty but is granted power to arbitrarily use force over the people and foreign nations. Though the grant of power many times is meant to be small and limited, it inevitably masticizes into an omnipotent political cancer. This is the problem for which the world has suffered throughout the ages. Though meant to be limited and nevertheless is a 100% sacrifice of a principle that that would-be tyrants find irresistible. It is used vigorously, incrementally and insidiously. Granting power to government officials always proves the adage that power corrupts. Once government gets a limited concession for those use of force to mold people's habits and plan the economy, it causes a steady move toward tyrannical government. Only a revolutionary spirit can reverse the progress and deny to the government this arbitrary use of aggression. There's no in-between. Sacrificing a little liberty for imaginary safety always ends badly. Today's mess is a result of America's accepting option two, even though the founders attempted to give us option one. The results are not good. As our liberties have been eroded, our wealth has been consumed. The wealth we see today is based on debt and a foolish willingness on the part of foreigners to take our dollar for good goods and services. They then loan them back to us to perpetuate our debt. It's amazing that it has worked for this long, but the impasse in Washington is solving our problems indicate that many are starting to understand the seriousness of the worldwide debt crisis and the dangers we face. The longer this process continues, the harsher the outcome will be. And that's the end of that portion of the transcripts. Did you comment on that or go into the next one, or are you reading? I can tell.
No, he's trying to get it off of mute.
Okay.
No doubt. I think he nails it there. I mean, this speech is incredible. And there's no way you can go through this thing, 100%. Hopefully we just kind of create enough interest that people take the time to read it, to study it, to learn. It's a good foundational speech. Can I just go ahead and read the next section?
Sure, go ahead.
The financial crisis is a moral crisis. Many are now acknowledging that a financial crisis looms, but few understand it's in reality a moral crisis. It's a moral crisis that has allowed our liberties to be undermined and permits the exponential growth of illegal government power. Without a clear understanding of the nature of the crisis, it will be difficult to prevent a steady march towards tyranny and the poverty that will accompany it. Ultimately, the people have to decide which form of government they want, option one or option two. There's no other choice. Claiming there is a choice of a little tyranny is like describing pregnancy as a touch of pregnancy. It is a myth to believe that a mixture of free markets and government central economic planning is a worthy compromise. What we see today is a result of that type of thinking, and the result speaks for itself or themselves. And really what you're looking at is look at our economic crash that we went through and are still going through.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to add a component, because being that most of my life, or all of my life, I've been a conservative, most of my life I've been a Republican, we believe in free markets and limited government, or at least that's what I thought we believed in. Okay, here's the problem. I never heard Romney address any of this stuff. All he ever did was repeat this thing over and over and over again. I'm a businessman, so I can solve this problem. I'm a businessman, so I can solve this problem.
Right.
He never got into this. He never got into the Fed. In fact, he loved Ben Bernanke. He was against it. He was against the bailouts, for the bailouts, against the bailouts, for the bailouts. Just depend on who he was trying to defeat in the primary was based on what side he would get on. And then when he went after Obama, then he was against him again. And then he was for him again. In other words, he had no damn plan, which meant that his plan was status quo. Status quo is everything that Ron Paul is talking about here with these markets and the Fed and the continual refusal of the people that we elect on both sides of the aisle to get serious about what's coming down the pike. I mean, this ties to another topic, and I won't get in too much in depth in this, but we've talked about it, was that interview with Lindsey Williams talking about this China trade deal with China and Russia, China and Japan, China and South Africa, China and Brazil, China and the United Emirates States, China setting up the system to buy, countries can buy and sell oil through their economic system now. Hello? We don't have that kind of room to lose the U.S. trade dollar or the U.S. oil dollar
because we are the world market trade dollar and oil dollar. If somebody pulls 20% of that from us, as far out as extended as we are and as little as gold we have behind our fake money produced out of thin air, you know, it's serious crap. And this is what Ron Paul's been talking about for 36 flipping years. Not to overtalk Ron Paul, but, you know, we said tonight we're going to go through his speech. And this has been his primary strength of argument for 36 years. This system's going to fail. The guys who develop, say that word, for some reason I'm tripping over that word, the K word.
Keynesian.
Keynesianism. You know how you just lose it and you can't ever say it again because you trip it up in your mind? Was created by a socialist. The economic foundation for that dollar system was what socialist countries and communist nations used. I mean, it is mind-boggling when you get into the research of this stuff. You know, it is totally designed for a system that totally manipulates its people at will. Do the research. Don't believe me. I don't know anything. I can't even say the damn word tonight. Anyway, I'm sorry. But you know what I mean?
Well, that's okay,
man. When you open the door on some of this stuff, you're like going, and intelligent people with degrees actually figured this crap out? And here's what, you know what the scariest part is? They convince the American people to buy into it. That's the scary part. Romney convinced him. Obama convinced American people he was Mr. Hope and Change when he was a Marxist in disguise. Oh, Romney has convinced the Republican voters he was a conservative. That's the part that's just laughable, is that we the people have given up critical thinking and the ability to think for ourselves and ask questions and not believe the crap coming out of the people's mouths or the news. You know, the news systems are the same people who back, you know, these institutes and Wall Street and these globalist companies. They're all the same people. And you stand there and drool and go, oh, okay, Romney's electable. God, you would have, yeah, I mean, you know, you just kind of wake up one day and you're like, oh, crap. And the one guy that spoke the truth for 36 years is retiring.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, next. Great. Now he's going to take his fans.
Yeah, now we got Boehner and Ryan and his 20. In 20 years, we'll balance the budget. We ain't got 20 years, stupid.
Well, that's something great. That Virgil Goode was talking about.
We got two election cycles, 2014 and 2016. Either people wake up or you will have a new government system and economic system ruling your life, guaranteed. Mm-hmm. Coming, baby.
If you want to look like, Europe, that's where we're, you know, economically, that's where we're headed.
No, it's worse than that. Yep. So this is fun stuff. Anyway, you know, we're eating up time really fast, so I don't think we can read crap, but you know, he goes through limiting government excess versus a virtualist moral people, and that was an incredible part of his talk. You know, he goes, our Constitution, which was intended to limit government power and abuse, has failed. The founders warned that a free society depends on a virtuous and moral people. The current crisis reflects that their concerns were justified. Most politicians and pundits are aware of the problems we face, but spend all their time trying to reform government. The sad part is that the suggested reforms almost always lead to less freedom, and the importance of a virtuous and moral people is either ignored or not understood. The new reforms serve only to further undermine liberty.
Well, here's what I think in part is what's going on. Right, and I think here's what's happening in part. You know, we talked about reform. I think that the politicians, you know, are not going to or have little if no interest in changing things better for the people. It's because by the time they get into the positions that they are at now, they are so insulated by what happens to the majority of the citizens of this country that, frankly, it doesn't matter to them. They've got themselves in a position where, you know, rise or fall, they're going to be all right. You know, they're taken care of. They're insulated from it.
Well,
so I think that's, you know, I think that's a big part of it.
Here's a key thing, and Rex has talked about this, and too bad he didn't come on tonight because it would have been awesome. But he's talked about this. This system, this new economic system, is already in place. You know, in other words, these people all sitting around, they're going, well, we've broken this system. No fiat currency has ever lasted this long, you know, producing money out of thin air and then multiplying the value of that money multiple times. In other words, you print $1 billion, you hand it to banking institutes who then multiply that money magically 26 times, and then they lend it out. No, you know, I mean, when you just say that and it comes out of your mouth and you go, that's our economic system, you know, it kind of sounds crazy, kind of sci-fi, doesn't it? Because the way it always worked before a fiat system, and they tried fiat systems before, but when you had gold, it was backed. And you know, we had those graphs from Kelly, you know, those six graphs that show when Nixon finally totally removed us off the gold standard. You saw those graphs. Everything skyrocketed, debt, interest, inflation, oil, you know, all the things that impact our lives right off the chart over since Nixon. Because you took away that standard. You know, you took away that a dollar of gold equals a $1 bill, currency. When you look at paper money, you know, we look at it as money, it ain't money. It's a debt. It's a piece of debt paper. You know, I mean, it's just amazing when you look at this stuff. But this whole system is destined to fail. It's never worked for a length of time. The only reason it's worked this length of time is because of technology and world. You know, we're in the world market, and we've manipulated more. You know, beyond. And so, yeah, it's definitely overextended. And Ron Paul has been talking about this forever, so. He finally got up and said, I mean, you hear what he said. People kept asking him, are you ready to endorse Romney? He goes, why? Basically, what he said without saying it is, doesn't matter. Either guy, same difference. Nothing changed. You know? I know nobody wants to hear that, but that's the reality. So, conclusion, because we're running out of time, right?
Yeah, we got about 13 minutes here. There's about, you know, 13 minutes. Of course, we could go over, you know, somewhat, as we've been wanting to do lately. So, and speaking of that, we've got 12 minutes left, and if folks do want to go into an extended version of Bard's Logic tonight, feel free and call in, whether you just want to listen or if you want to chime in. It's at area code 347-945-7428. If you want to chime in about the topic tonight, just if you call in, just push the 1 on your phone dial, and I will open up your mic. But if you're going to call in, yeah, there is only 12 minutes to do so. So go ahead, Chris. I thought I'd put that out there just in case we do go into recording time.
Yeah, I just finally saw Tex and Rex pop up in chat. Hold on.
Might have been there for a little bit.
Oh, have they? Well, I've been reading and trying to stay focused and not so we don't get too far off track. So, conclusion. What are the greatest dangers that the American people face today and impede the goal of a free society? There are five. Number one, continuous attack on our civil liberties, which threatens the rule of law and our ability to resist the onrush of tyranny. Number two, violent anti-Americanism that has engulfed the world because the phenomenon of blowback is not understood or denied. Our foreign policy is destined to keep us involved in many wars that have no business being in. National bankruptcy and a greater threat to our national security will result. Number three, the ease in which we go to war. Good point. Without a declaration of Congress, but accepting international authority from the UN and NATO,
even for preemptive wars, otherwise known as aggression. Number four, a financial political crisis as a consequence of excessive debt, unfunded liabilities, spending bailouts, and gross discrepancies in wealth distribution going from the middle class to the rich. The danger of essential economic planning by the Federal Reserve must be understood, which is, we've touched on that. Rex, you know, I mean, this is a conscious conversation, because you can't understand any of this if you don't understand that. Number five, right? The world government taking over local and U.S. sovereignty. Anybody worried about that? You hear it in the news all day long. They're signing a petition. They're trying to, you know, secede from the union. They're, you know, we're worried about, you know, gun laws, worried about U.N. small arms treaty. We're worried about Treaty of the Sea, all this stuff. Let me say this again. Both sides. Okay? I got that out. World government taking over local and U.S. sovereignty by getting involved in the issues of war, welfare, trading, banking, world currency, taxes, property ownership. Oh, yeah. You know, remember that $40 billion a month mortgage-backed securities? Read
right.
up on
mm-hmm.
QE3. Read up on QE3, who's going to own all the property behind every loan in this country. It won't be your bank anymore. It won't be your local. It'll be the federal government. Hello, Agenda 21. Let's see, where did Agenda 21 really start? It's the EPA. Who was EPA? Who did the EPA, Robert?
That was Richard Nixon.
And what party was he with?
The Republican Party.
Oh, okay. All right. Property ownership and private ownership of guns. Happily, there is an answer for these dangerous trends. So, it's just a great speech. I don't know what to say. You know, I'm not a I didn't know who Ron Paul was, you know, a year ago. I really didn't. I was ignorant.
Yeah, from
but
the
really
every time I've seen him, it was always people were always saying how, you know, how discombobulated he was. Listening to that, he didn't sound so did he, does he?
Let me read this last point really quick. The Constitution or more laws per se have no value if the people's attitudes aren't changed. To achieve liberty and peace, two powerful human emotions have to be overcome. Number one is envy, which leads to hate and class warfare. Number two is intolerance, which leads to bigoted and judgmental policies. These emotions must be replaced with a much better understanding of love, compassion, tolerance, and free market economics. Freedom, when understood, brings people together. When tried, freedom is popular. The problem we have faced over the years has been that economic interventionists are swayed by envy, whereas social interventionists are swayed by intolerance of habits and lifestyles. The misunderstanding that tolerance is an endorsement of certain activities motivates many to legislate moral standards, which should only be set by individuals making their own choices. Both sides use force to deal with these misplaced emotions. Both are authoritarians. Neither endorses volunteerism. Both views ought to be rejected. I have come to one firm conviction after these many years of trying to figure out the plain truth of things. The best chance for achieving peace and prosperity for the maximum number of people worldwide is to pursue the cause of liberty. Great speech. I'm sorry, but it is. And I still haven't studied the whole thing because it is pretty deep.
Indeed, and that brings us to, of course, we only have 7 minutes of live time, so at this point I will like to thank you, Chris,
Rex.
Of course, for your information that you bring forth, and also the folks who have come and listened to the live show, whether you have listened to this through the Bard's Logic Political Talk website, which I will reiterate for the folks who've came in later that you can find a link to the Sheldrick Wildlife Trust in which you can sponsor a baby elephant whose parents were killed by poachers. And it's very inexpensive. It's $50 a year where you can sponsor one. I think it's a great gift. And it's easy to find. As I said, just go to the Bard's Logic Political Talk website. Well, you can find the link there on the Bard's Logic Political Talk, the show on Blog Talk Radio. There's a link there. Go to the Get Involved page, and there is a bright red button that says Save an Elephant on there, and there's a video for folks can watch. And if you feel so compelled, just let me know by contacting me through the contact page and let me know of your gift. And if you'd like, I'd give you a shout-out on the show for your kind deed. And also, people can check out www.patriotjournalist.com. I recommend checking that as well. And so we've got still about 6 minutes here. Oh, yeah, and also if you're listening to this on archives, I like to thank you for listening to the show as well. So, Chris, I've got a message here that I'm going to read. So if there's anything you'd like to chime in about, I do see
Rex is in the queue.
Yeah, well, I see 202, which I think may be someone we know. I do not see a little blip of Rex on there from the Rex and Tech Show, which folks can listen to at on Sundays at 10 p.m. till midnight Eastern time. But I do, if Rex, you're on there, just push the 1 on your phone dial to let me know that you'd like to chime in. But I do have and there it is. At this time, I will open up both mics, I believe. One is from Rex and the other techs of the Rex and Tech Shows. Gentlemen, your mics are live. Thank you for coming to the show.
Well, I mean, the end of the show.
Well, yes, that's true. To the extended version.
You guys are having a good conversation. I mean, Ron Paul's speech today I thought was excellent. I've only run through it once, and I was actually doing other stuff. I'm planning on listening again. And, you know, I just find it fascinating, having been reading Dr. Paul's stuff for 2 decades, and he's been, you know, preaching it for, 36 years now.
36.
It's amazing how he is so misrepresented as this crazy kook. You know, Ron Paul represents the old right of the Republican Party. He represents the real conservative, traditional Republican Party. And I think that if we don't get in touch with those roots, we're just going to end up with 2 left-wing parties, and all we get to do is change the players on the chessboard. But the game stays the same. And, you know, I see big changes coming, but, you know, you gotta educate people. Unfortunately, way too many people in this country love socialism.
Absolutely.
Well,
right.
Go ahead, Dan.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I have only listened to about 20 minutes of Ron Paul's final speech. I found it definitely very interesting and want to get all the way through, and then started sort of tuning into your show in the background, and I am 3 seconds away from falling asleep, but wanted to dial in and just say hello to everyone. I've had a heck of a week, but, you know, keep the faith. And I really like what Ron Paul had to say, and even Bill Kristol gave what I would consider damning praise to the Liberty Movement by saying that, you know, he thought that there was definitely a future for it, that Rand Paul could be one of the top tier, and then he named off a bunch of rhinos that he would prefer, and he says, I don't really like the movement, but I definitely could see that, you know, it could be, you know, he could be a top tier contender. So what I would say is, if you are thinking about Rand Paul, you know, of course, it's not about the man, really, it's about the movement, the principles, but just be prepared for the establishment to screw him just as hard in 4 years as they screwed conservatives in this election, because it's coming. All they want are people who are going to sell out on every single principle, keep spending, keep raising taxes, and keep invading everybody on planet Earth.
Well, thank you, Tex, for coming in tonight. And I've just was told by... No. What's that?
I said thank me for that note of hope.
I love
better,
that.
Keep
invading everybody on the face... Sorry, Dan, I love that. Keep invading everybody on the face of the earth. That was awesome.
That's what empires do.
You bet.
Well, there's only 1 minute left of live show, so we are going to be going into the extended version here very shortly. So for those folks who are listening live, you've got a minute to call in if you'd like to hear more. at area code 347-945-7428. But if you choose to have to go because it's midnight in some parts of the country, then go ahead. But listen to the rest of this on the archives. And thanks again for coming. Good night and take care and hope to see you again. We've got about 30 seconds left of live, so I will bring that back to you, Chris, and then Rex. And then I see there are two callers on the line, so if you'd like to chime in, just push the one on your phone dial, and I will know if you'd like to chime in. Go ahead, Chris.
Well, I actually had a question for Rex in his economic mind. Do you think that, you know, I've seen the charts, you've seen the charts, you know, and Kelly's got those six charts on his site that just shows when that gold standard was finally removed by Nixon, that everything just started, you know, skyrocketing and accelerating.
Yep.
And our cycles of up and down, you know, of the manipulation of the markets, which I've lost more small fortunes in every time they do it, you know, and it's off the chart. You know, it's just gone hog wild. Do you think that the reason people didn't freak out and demand a change is because in those cycles and those print, you know, printing more money, throw it in the market, we'll go from the dot bomb, that should have crashed, it never did well, we went from the savings and loan crash, you know, the dot bomb crash, but they just kept cycling into a new debt cycle, and there was always wealth to be made in those cycles that kept people from finally going, you know, from saying enough. You think that, you know, can you kind of give a little bit of an, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah. I mean, I would say it kind of depends on what you mean by people. Because if you're talking about your average Joe who's, you know, trying to invest a little bit in the market to build up his retirement savings or something, then no. They're not quiet about it for that reason. If you're talking about guys like Mitt Romney and George Soros, yeah, absolutely. The fact is that the boom-bust cycle that wasn't because of the Republicans decoupling from gold in 71. It was because of the Federal Reserve, 1913, and even the prior incarnations of it, the First and Second Bank of the United States,
right,
that caused these boom-bust cycles. They can be very profitable if you know they're coming and you know the political patronage that will ensue, and you know how to play that game. You know, like Romney said, I want to go to Washington. Washington's where the money is. I want to get all the money from Washington. So if you're, you know, one of those guys, then you love it. If you're your average person, no. What happens is that you're just economically illiterate. Now, you know, don't get offended because I called you economically illiterate. You are. You're economically illiterate because they don't teach it. You know, the J.P. Morgans of the world ensure that our education system makes people economic slaves, not economically literate. So you got to educate yourself. People like fiat money because you can just print more of it, and it transfers wealth to those who receive it first. So if you're one of the early receivers of counterfeit dollars, you're making bank. It's when it filters through the rest of the system that it screws everybody else, and it's coming to an end. I mean, the only question that we have left to ask is, with what are we going to replace it? You know, there are several options. Obviously, the people like Romney and Obama and Goldman Sachs that owns them both want a, you know, global fiat currency like the special drawing rights of the IMF.
Right.
What we want is a commodity-backed currency or even competing currencies, which would be pretty cool. But, you know, the fact is that the problem is that we think that money is wealth. And money and wealth are not the same thing. The United States is the wealthiest country in the history of the world because we have vast natural resources. We've got most of the world's oil and liquid natural gas, and Tex can talk about this. We have so many resources, and we have talent because we've been drawing from all the world for 200 years, getting the best and brightest here because of liberty. And that's the attractive element in these United States. We have to restore that draw for immigration from the rest of the world to pull the world's talent by having liberty, and we have to use our own wealth, and I think the energy market is clearly the number one thing in the history of the country, and it will be in the future, that you can use to retire your debt if you have a stable currency, everybody, all those 22% of people who are unemployed will get jobs, because a lot of the jobs are skilled, but you can learn those skills, and we can put programs in, you know, the oil companies will put in those programs to teach those skills, because they'll need people to take care of it. And the only problem is that the way that it works currently is because we have a socialist structure and people keep asking for more and more of it, because it's easier to have someone give you something they took from someone else and for you to get off your ass and go work for it. You end up with a system of political patronage. So the government controls the licensing of these distribution channels, and even charges the companies royalties and fees on access to the actual oil and liquid natural gas assets. So what we need to do is truly put in place free markets and competition. But unfortunately, if you're one of the guys who holds these licenses, like I think there's only one company that has the licensing for the exporting of liquid natural gas, you don't want anybody else having that license, because now you got a monopoly on the market, and you're going to pay a premium to the government to give you that license and not give it to anybody else. And the government, guys like Obama and Boehner and all those losers, are happy to hold on to that power because they get paid to manipulate it on behalf of the corporations. And it's that corporatism that is the disaster. So these are the things we have to understand to realize that with a stable currency, truly free markets, competing sovereignties with all the states for business, and a limited federal government that does those 18 things it's supposed to do well and nothing else, then even the poorest of the poor in this country will benefit, because a rising tide raises all ships.
That was beautiful.
Throw out the text for more information about the energy stuff, because I mean we've got it. We're just, you know, the government is screwing. I mean he talked about it on our show several times. You've got so much oil sitting around doing nothing in West Texas and in Oklahoma, because there's
Alaska.
Because there's no place to, you can't get it delivered to be refined and sold. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
we had
exactly. I mean, it's sort of at the point where, you know, you had basic oil resources in the country, oil and natural gas resources, natural gas being oil that was cooked closer at a higher temperature, closer to the core. And now we have the technology to produce the source rock. So every, you know, oil deposit or natural gas deposit in the world has a source rock, which is where it came from. And then it usually hits a transition stone. It starts moving up the formation towards the surface and starts migrating. And that's where we found it. But now we have the technology to actually mine the source rock. And so, oh, my God, the volumes that you can get out of this stuff is absolutely enormous. And the biggest problem is going to be regulations around it for, you know, various reasons. But, you know, I mean, I don't want to be too conspiratorial, but, you know, who's funding our environmental movement at home? It's some people at home who are actually committed environmentalists. That's a lot of people overseas who don't want to see the United States independent on energy. You know, or self-sufficient in energy, because their whole livelihood is derived around selling us energy, and without that, they don't really have much of an economy. So there's regulation that can shut it down, and the other problem is, once you start tapping into shale deposits, which is the source rock, volumes you can get are so huge that the price starts dropping through the floor, and then you have companies producing this stuff, and they're like, I'm losing my shirt. I can produce all this stuff, but not at this price. And so that's the other challenge, is to make it marketable.
And there's only one person that talked about that in this last race. He talked about it in such a way, and he tied it all in together. It was a great 28-minute speech about 250 gas, talking about how this, with proper government oversight and a specific unchangeable mandate to use the proceeds from that energy only to get us out of debt. It was a fantastic speech. If we truly wanted to be free, we would employ the program that Newt laid out to get out of debt, to exploit our resources and reduce the price of energy, which, you know, most people don't think twice about except when they're filling up at the pump. but it affects the price of every single thing in this country because we are an energy – we're a vast country, so it's an energy-intensive country, and it could be so beneficial to have cheaper energy. Obviously, you don't want the bottom to fall out because then you would have chaos, but a proper pacing, which, you know, the energy industry and the market can actually – is the most efficient way to create it, not through government fiat – would be fantastic, and we would all benefit dramatically from it. Unemployment would drop, the money would be stable, we'd be out of debt, we wouldn't have to go place our young men and women in harm's way all the way across the world. It would actually create more stability in the world. It would be a huge benefit, but the corporatists don't want something like that to happen, which is why they shut Newt down, it's why they ignore Ron Paul, and it is only because we are quiet and acquiescent and we accept it that this happens, because it is up to us. It is, you know, no matter what the government is, whether it's an absolute tyrannical government or even if you want to go to the other extreme, a total anarchy, it doesn't work without the consent of the government. You get the government you want, and when you're lazy and envious and would rather have someone plunder legally on your behalf than actually work, this is what you'll get.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, the story of this election was that the Republican Party, well, screw the party, the Republican voter was pumped up and ready to go to the election. We couldn't wait to vote for someone to remove Obama, and, you know, we started looking at the candidates and everything, and as I said many times, I didn't have anything against Mitt Romney, but, you know, I didn't particularly care about him either. He was just someone else up on stage that seemed to have a lot of pizzazz around the party leadership, but the voters will decide. And, you know, as the thing progressed, we coalesced around one leader sort of after another, but eventually we settled on Newt Gingrich, right, because he's the logical choice. And, you know, he's led the party before. He led us a great victory. There are also Ron Paul, and when I watched the first debates, I watched two people speak in particular, and those were Newt Gingrich and Ron Paul. And then the other people I was just kind of listening to see what they had to offer and how they could be better than these two candidates. And, you know, various people distinguished themselves in one way or another or didn't. And, you know, I heard Gingrich. I'm like, you know, come on. I mean, it's Gingrich. What are you going to do? You can't – nobody's going to be better than this guy in terms of leading the party, right? And as much as I like Ron Paul – I know how much Washington, D.C., the establishment can't stand what he has to say, and so I was, you know, like, okay, well, they'll coalesce around Gingrich. Gingrich will adopt some of the Ron Paul stuff as we go forward, maybe even make him his VP pick. You know, can't be sure about that, but, you know, possibly in a perfect world. You know, we can move forward and we can go fix this thing. But along came a spider, and that was Karl Rove, who posed as a news analyst and as an objective, dispassionate news analyst on Fox News, and basically assassinated all these people in the minds of Americans in the terms of telling them that, oh, these guys can't win, they're too divisive, they can never win. The only guy who could ever win is Mitt Romney. And, of course, everybody knew it was a lie, but because they heard it, and they heard it repeated often enough, they believed it, and so they piled out to vote for the winner, because the only way to lose in politics is to vote for the guy who doesn't win, right? That's what they've been telling you for years, and that's not true. The only way to lose is to vote for the guy who doesn't believe what you believe, because the party will learn that they could ignore what you actually care for. And, you know, my biggest concern was, as much as I hated Mitt Romney and still do and can't stand him and hope I never see him ever again or hear his name mentioned, except what a catastrophic failure he was, you know, was that had he won, they would have used that to prove that, see, conservatives don't matter. But now that he's lost, don't worry, they've pre-baked the cake. See, he lost because conservatives don't matter. Because we're too conservative, we're too white, we're too old, we're too Christian, we believe too much of this stuff. Meanwhile, you have Tea Party people and Ron Paul Liberty people of all genders, all stripes, all age groups coming out of the woodwork saying, hey, we want freedom, we want limited government, we want to do this, that, and the other, and what do? They get rid of them, you know? Sarah Palin, got to go, right? We're too white, we're too male, Sarah Palin, get out of here. You know, Alan West, too white, too male, get out of here, you know? It's ridiculous, but they do this on purpose. And it feeds, yeah, it feeds instantly into a bias that has been engendered by the media and the Republican Party is part of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I, as I've seen this narrative being adopted over the past, you know, week and a half, it's more and more clear that this is the case. And so I'm just going down and documenting things that I'll be raising on our own show. But our leadership, you know, the Republican Party leadership is completely bought into the fact that they hate you, that this party is the white, old white man Christian party, and it can never win and it has no hope and it has to be destroyed and replaced with the Rhino Party, which is the Democrat Light Party. It doesn't even understand what it's leading, and yet it claims leadership.
And that,
they're not.
Go ahead, Dan. But I do have someone who would also would like to chime in. I believe I know who this is, and so I will open up the mic 903, and if we'll let Dan finish his thought, and then you can chime in. I believe I just know who this is, but go ahead, Dan, and then 903. Your mic is live. You go ahead after Dan.
Well, Robert, I think I was bringing it in for landing, and so I'll just toss it over to 903 because I had nothing really else to say.
Oh, okay. Well, if I interrupt you, I apologize. I just seen him was on hold for a bit, or she was on hold for a bit, so I want to open the mic. So 903, you're live.
Thanks. This is Mary.
It is Mary. Great to hear from you again.
In Texas. I just been busy with other things, but decided tonight not to, you know, I haven't been watching TV and typically just come on the computer and or call in and find out what's going on in the news for the news with y'all instead of watching. I mean, I used to watch Fox News every night, and so now I just don't, and I'm a lot happier. But,
yeah, it's a good thing not to watch Fox News. It's much better for your psyche, your emotions, and your intellect.
Right, but I mean, I can't watch even CNN or any of the news. I mean, TV, period.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's not just
you're better
Fox.
When you tune it all out.
Yeah. But I just did get an email from my son in college who was, like, emailing with his uncles and about the succeeding from the union kind of thing. So I was kind of surprised that he was even on that circle of conversation. And so that's what brought me on tonight. I thought, well, I'm going to get on and just make sure and see what's going on. And with listening to y'all, it made me feel like at least one thing with this petition that's going on, I would say it is getting some attention. And maybe Washington might pay attention because of that. But
I don't know, Mary. I mean, well, you're talking about the secession petitions?
Yes.
Well, I think that's a scam. I mean, first of all, you don't petition for secession. Because typically the entity you're trying to secede from does not want you to. Last time we did this, we got invaded, okay? So I think that that's kind of silly, too. I think it's actually a scam to play into this narrative that Tex was talking about, that the, you know, conservative wing of the Republican Party is too old, too white, and too racist, which is why they're calling for secession. We haven't tried nullification yet, so why would you go to secession? I mean, I'm with General Lee. I'm pro-union, just, you know, don't invade my state.
Okay,
so,
let me say this. What, okay, they are doing, whoever started this, it's
Obama.
Well, okay.
Which on the WhiteHouse.com website, yeah.
Yeah, well, okay, so whatever has started it has really.
FEMA.
They obviously have done something right. I mean, they've gotten a lot of attention. They've got a lot of people involved on this. And I'm not just saying my college student. I mean, one of the uncles is, you know, a big businessman. And, I mean, you know, so it's gotten a vast
traction.
Majority of people involved in this. So,
well,
how can we do that?
Place.
How can you take that same
process
and,
you know,
do it so that we can get through to the government what we want to get through? I mean, how can we
the thing
marketing?
Is, I don't Yeah, what I would say, I mean, I have a lot of thoughts around this, which is, you know, remember when George Bush won in 2004, all these people were going to leave the country and become citizens of another country.
Right.
Just didn't believe it every year, right? You know,
yes,
and so now Republicans are in the same place. Who brought us here? It wasn't Barack Obama who brought you here, although he does suck. Who brought you here was Karl Rove, who had a relentless campaign over the past 2 years to completely demonize the person, to say that if Barack Obama wins, you not only, and if you don't vote for my chosen rhino, and if you vote for the conservative that you actually wanted, embodied in Newt Gingrich or, you know, even Ron Paul, they can't win. They're yesterday's news, and, you know, this rhino Mitt Romney is the wave of the future. And I know you don't like him, but Barack Obama is so bad that literally the country will be altered forever. And if you don't vote for him, it means there's more makers, there's more takers than makers, and all this other kind of BS that he created, right? And so people fell for that hook, line, and sinker. But that's not true.
59 million of them.
Yeah, that's not true. Look, there are people who vote for the Democrat Party, you know, just like there are people who cheer for the Pittsburgh Steelers because they grew up near Pittsburgh. Like, they grew up in a family that was Democrat. And they're just like, hey, the Democrats are always right, because I've been told the Democrats are always right. No matter what they stand for, the Democrats are right, because that's my team, right? And people say, no, that's not true. It's because they're communists and they're takers and they're getting money and they're in unions and, you know, whatever, and they're just, you know, bilking their companies dry and everything. Well, that's not true, because look at the Republicans this time. Mitt Romney stood for everything against what the Republican Party stands for. He's the father or the grandfather of Obamacare. You know, he's raising taxes. Well, I didn't call them taxes. I called them fees. Okay, well, you changed the word, but it's the same damn thing, right? You know, so it's a tax by another name. And he's a big government rhino. And what are people saying? Well, you have to vote for him. You have to vote for him because he's a Republican, because otherwise Obama would win. Well, so you have Republicans who vote for their team, even though they have someone who has the other guy's playbook, just because he's on their team. And all of this is what Karl Rove wrought on the country. He told them that if Romney doesn't win, we haven't just lost an election of which basically it's a coin toss, 50% of the time we'll win and 50% of the time the other side wins. We will have lost the nation. And he made the defeat so big, and he had a candidate so flawed that he couldn't win. And now everybody's running around. They're like, we've lost the country. It's time to secede. I mean, the man's failure damn near is about to cause the second civil war. He's got so bad.
Right. Well, I mean, the thing is like, I used to like him. I mean, you're talking to someone that, I mean, I listen, like I said, I listen to Fox News all the time. I had a picture taken with Karl Rove. I mean, I saw him down in Austin. I went, oh, Karl Rove. I mean, you know, in other words, like, so what did it take for me to not like him and not to, I mean, what I'm thinking of in my own mind, okay, what did it to me where I didn't, like, believe everything I heard on Fox anymore? I saw a difference in him and all. And, I mean, unfortunately, it wasn't really, you know, Blog Talk Radio. What happened to me was watching convention. I mean, watching the convention and seeing what happened, and then, like, being on the Internet and doing all that, I just, like, and then starting to listen to y'all. I mean, it just was like, and then, like, you know, Rex says, I mean, once you learn or figure out a certain things are going corrupt in the government, you can't go back. I mean, it's kind of like your eyes are open and then you can't go back. But
well, yeah.
How do we get other people to
show
get
them
there?
The honeycomb. Show them the honeycomb. Once you've seen the honeycomb, you can't go home. So show it to them. They got to see it, and they got to accept it for themselves.
Yeah, but it's hard in the sense of, you know, I saw it through watching the convention and hearing all that, but a lot of people still don't even know about that. I mean, yeah, it's just so silly. I mean, it's like, how can that be? We're in the same country. As I'm thinking to myself, Mitt Romney, he's, you know, pro-choice, he's abortion, all this. I have a friend that's on my news feed on saying, you know, how he's the opposite. And I'm just like going, how does she think that? I mean, what is she, I guess she's listening to Fox News and different things that are
shallow
thinking. Other things.
It's shallow thinking. Look, Mary, it's easier to believe the lie than it is to believe that you're being lied to. And if you know
mm-hmm.
that it's a lie,
that's
easier. It's harder to convince someone that they're being lied to because the lie is easier. It doesn't cause as much friction. It doesn't give you trouble with your friends and family. And then you can blame all the problems on the other side. Boehner's going to blame all the problems on Obama. Obama's going to blame all the problems on Boehner. In the meantime, in the back room, they're hugging each other and just screwing all of us. And that's how it works. It's the illusion that there's choice and that you've got some place to place your angst, when the simple fact is you just haven't thought critically and you won't allow yourself to see beyond the lie, because then you have to take personal responsibility for having participated in it. And we all have.
Mm-hmm.
Are you talking about the petition, Rex?
Which petition?
No, he's just talking about corruption.
I was just talking about the general corruption. I mean,
yeah,
not
I'm
petition,
being
too.
Sarcastic.
I'm from the Commonwealth of Virginia. Last time we seceded, we didn't petition anybody. We just did it.
My God. Yeah,
maybe it might not be the
petition.
Right way to do it, but, I mean, at least it's getting attention to the government that there are a lot of people unhappy, and if they think that they can sign the petition to make a point to the government, I mean, at
the
least
wrong attention.
It's
the
wrong
attention. Yeah, I mean, look, it's the wrong attention, because it plays into the narrative that people who want state sovereignty and who want the outdated, antiquated Constitution, that they're hearkening back to Jefferson and Washington and Madison, because those are old white Christian guys and they're racist because they all own slaves. That's the ploy. I mean, the fact is that if we put our attention to request that the federal government release you. I mean, last time that happened, 600,000 people died. Why don't we put our energies into actually nullifying the extra constitutional laws, as opposed to trying to pull out of the – I mean, there's no way that we could take the union apart. It was tough enough. It was tough enough when you had a contiguous region of the country with its own culture, and it was tough enough to do it then. Imagine now where we have such a plural culture. People live all over the country. We have business interests all over the country. It's so interconnected right now. If you take the union apart, the United States just devolves into chaos. Now, I'm not saying that I'm against secession. I'm a Virginia boy, so I'm all for secession as a final resort. But we're not there yet. We haven't tried nullification. That works much better.
Well, the other thing, Rex, is, look, in this election, I think a lot of people just realize that the left-right paradigm doesn't describe the current conflicts in the United States anymore, the political conflict, because the two parties are in vast agreement. And, what we did here, people like Mark Levin and others, and the Ron Paul movement kind of pointed out that, look, the conflict is between statists and people who have a more libertarian bent, be they on the right or the left. And the majority of the people, once you get to that concentrated power, how many people live at that level of society that they're going to participate in the new oligarchy? Well, it's very few, right? So if you wake up the other people and say, hey, these assholes are about to, screw us and take all the power for themselves, well, just start finding people who are talking about things similar to liberty. Find someone who can dig you out of the hole, Some people are going to go whole hog, your Ron Paul. Some people are going to go part of the way, perhaps your Newt Gingrich's. There's some other people as well, Virgil Goods. We got a bajillion parties out there, and I'll be honest, I am ignorant on many of them. There are going to be people who are people who are saying these things, and go find them and go seek them out. The thing is, you have to get in touch with other people and let them know that this is the conflict. The conflict is between centralized control and decentralized control, and we need to start going in the direction of decentralized control. And in this election, for me, the defeat of Romney, particularly in light of lower Republican turnout when they were doing everything they can to say that, this essentially is D-Day, and if you lose this, then you've lost everything and, there's no future for you. Romney's loss is probably the greatest victory that we can possibly have, because we have now sent a message to the Republican Party leadership that if you ignore us, you can't win. And you can sit up there and bloviate with your Bill Kristols and your Karl Rove and, all your other talking heads, but we don't fall in line anymore. Once they realize that, they realize, like, holy shit, we've lost control. And that's the message I wanted to send, you know, and I think we wanted to send, which is, you cannot tell us what to do. There's more of us than there are of you, and we can't be manipulated into doing this shit anymore.
But I think we're missing the opportunity right now to just there's a lot of people so mad and upset and all that, to that energy that's there right now for us to do something with it. I mean, like, I feel like we're missing out if we don't direct it. I mean, I know the succession thing, y'all are saying, no, that's not good. Well, but, you know,
I would say direct it at trying to remove John Boehner as Speaker of the House. Contact your congressman.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That would be great.
Direct it that way.
Start going to Republican
Party meetings and standing up and raising questions. Like, hey, I hated that guy. Why was the media trying to force him on me? Why were you trying to force him on me? Why were people saying he was electable? Nobody here thought he was electable. Anybody here, was he your first choice as a candidate? I mean, just call everyone out. Because they know it's a lie. They're like, no, I never liked the guy. But you fell in line at the end of the day because Karl Rove told you there was no hope. He didn't tell you there was no hope for you or conservatism. He said there's no hope for us as a nation, for the vision of the founding fathers, if you don't vote for my horrible Frankenstein rhino creature. You will have disinherited the founding fathers. I mean, think about it. That's the level he had to go to try to convince you. And you know what? It still didn't work. And so they kind of played, you know, pulled the card out from their sleeve. And they just realized, like, shit, we have nothing left. Yeah, you don't have anything left. You're done. You can't take this party in a rhino direction. So it's time to take it over, as far as
I'm concerned. I mean, if you're trying to run, you know, the Wizard of Oz candidate, because, I mean, let's face it, Mitt Romney had no brain, he had no heart, he had no courage, and he had no courage. So, I mean, if you're trying to run, you know, the Wizard of Oz candidate, you're going to lose, because even though Obama has none of those things either, he at least fakes it better than Romney. But Romney managed to lose to an incumbent that lost 13% of his vote. We're not talking about a couple of million people. We're talking about 13%. It was like
almost
9 million. And
almost
you lost. That doesn't tell you that you're appealing to old white dead guys. It tells you that you're a hollow candidate with no core and no principles, and you're on the left. Because what about true traditional Republican conservative principles aren't appealing? And that's where you direct people. That's where you send them. I mean, look, the fact is, when you're angry and upset and signing a petition as a seed from a federal government, I mean, stupid idea. I'm not saying that secession isn't reasonable, because the federal government is the creature of the states, not the other way around. But you don't ask permission for something like that. You just do it. But rather than focusing on something emotional and stupid like that, you got to take a critical step and think tactically and strategically. We're looking strategically at 2014 and 2016 tactically right now. Take out the enemy. Take out John Boehner. Take out conservatives and the liberty-minded in the party.
Wait, I only heard part of that, Rex.
The rhinos.
Oh, Karl Rove. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Trog, eat the rhinos. Well, I was going to say
something,
too. Look
at the results
too,
of this election, which is that Mitt Romney did not just lose to Barack Obama. He lost once again to John McCain. He got less votes than John McCain.
Right.
He ran the guy who lost to the guy who lost Obama, and you know what happened? The guy who lost to McCain, who lost to Obama and lost to McCain.
Oh, God.
Who thought that the outcome was going to be different? How many millions of dollars did they pay people to convince them that Romney was going to win where McCain had failed by being even more left?
Tex, every time I tweeted that out all through from May 2nd through the convention, people would attack me and they would say, Romney's more conservative than McCain. It's different this time. It'll be better. I'm like, but he lost to McCain and McCain lost to Obama. Why would you run this guy?
They want victory so much they could not see the warning signs. This is when I started getting involved. Mm-hmm. I was like, holy shit, in these primaries, people are not turning out. They turned out in droves to vote for Newt Gingrich. We could win with Newt Gingrich because people show up to vote positively for them. They're inspired by this shit, okay? You know, and they're inspired by Ron Paul, right? People show up for that. Mitt Romney, if it's Mitt Romney and Santorum, people stay the hell home. They are ballot box poison. And
okay, one other question.
What
you're
I was
on
doing
news.
In the primary is trying to tell people they will not turn out. And guess what? They didn't turn out on Election Day. So conclusion, go ahead, Mary.
What about Newt? I mean, I've seen this where they're wanting him to be the speaker instead of.
Yeah.
I mean, can that happen? I mean.
Sure,
well,
yeah. Unfortunately,
well,
it wasn't seconded.
Happen, but in reality, it won't.
It's never happened before.
Right.
But it's certainly worth the shot. I mean, if you want to, if you're talking about sending a message, instead of signing a petition to secede from the United States, how about signing a petition to make Newt Gingrich Speaker of the House? That would be a good message to send.
Well,
let's
tweeted John Boehner the other day, and I told him, you suck the Speaker of the House, you have to go, and you're no Newt Gingrich, which I'm sure he got a kick out of, because he's like, oh, I am not Newt Gingrich, because Newt Gingrich is controversial. But, you know.
Newt Gingrich talks about stuff that matters. I don't want to talk about anything that matters. I just want to get a tan and cry in my cornflakes because I'm a piece of beef jerky.
Exactly.
Okay, well.
Mary, the thing is that this is actually natural and this is good, because this is what we are suffering from in these United States right now, is we're suffering from affluence. And despite the debasement of our currency by 98% since 1913, our relatively free market system, our entrepreneurial class, has produced so much wealth that we are affluent. And when you're affluent, you get a little lazy, you get a little fat, you get a little lax, and then stuff goes wrong. And when it goes wrong, it gets real wrong, and then that's what wakes people up and gets them back in the game. I mean, look, Canada, our neighbor to the north, is now more of a free market economy than we are, and they are moving away from socialized medicine after experimenting with it for so long. And we're going in the other direction. That tells you that when you push people down, eventually they will realize, hey, this crap doesn't work. I've legally plundered everybody else, and now there's nothing left to plunder, and this sucks. So we have the unique opportunity of not having to fall that far, because in our history we have examples of true free market success, and we have the natural resources. See, if you tried to implement a program like this, say, in Japan, it would be kind of tough because they have no natural resources. We do. We have wealth. We just need to stabilize our money, and we need to wake people up and let them know that liberty actually works better for the things that you need than this socialism that you think is so successful.
Well,
it's about educating people one at a time.
This, Rex, what you're talking about is actually, I think, the next political wave that's hitting this country. And I think people are waking up to this, which is that federalism is the solution to most of our problems, not federalism. You know, diffusing power out to the states and to the localities to figure everything out, not making everything a centralized solution is what I'm trying to say. And, you know, the other thing is more of a libertarian type view, which is libertarian being the only other word I know in opposition to statism, which is that the localities will decide, you know, how they want to govern themselves, right? And so if you have, you know, a Quaker state up in Massachusetts and, you know, something else, a Lutheran state down in, you know, God only knows where, and a Catholic state in Maryland or something, the solution to that is federalism, you know, to, you know, transfer power to the locality to decide those things. And if you're in those societies and you don't like it, move. And, you know, just looking at my own family's genealogy, they traveled all around. They, you know, first one arrived in Massachusetts and was like, this place is pretty square, I got to get out of here. And then they're in Pennsylvania like, this is even squarer, you know, I got to get out of here. And, you know, kept moving until they found a place that they could fit in or that they liked. But that is the
Deadwood.
That's the essence of the sort of 50 experiments in democracy. Back then they didn't have a number on it. They were just independent experiments in democracy. But right now apparently we only have 50. But, you know, stop trying to make every problem, send it to the federal level, send it to your local state government or your city government for a solution.
And hold them accountable.
Exactly.
I think that would work a lot better. text.
Well, so did our founding fathers.
Yeah, because, I mean, the thing is now even more so than then, back then, I mean, now just think about how different everyone is. I mean, we've got people from all over, everywhere that's living in this country, and, I mean, we're never going to agree on anything. And so if you could take it back to the individual communities and states and all, I mean, we could at least get along better. I mean,
well,
we're
not
going to agree.
No, we would agree on that, Mary. We would agree on that.
We were always like that. We were mixed all the time.
That's why they drafted the First Amendment. They drafted the First Amendment. It wasn't so that you could, you know, sacrifice goats and smoke marijuana as part of your religious ritual. They did it because they did not want Calvinists and Lutherans and Catholics and Presbyterians and Methodists trying to kill each other to become the dominant religion in a particular region. And so the idea is that you have to have liberty for relative autonomy, but you have to have a common culture. And everybody that comes here has to accept the fact that our common culture is Christian. Now, that doesn't mean you demand that someone worship as a Christian. It doesn't mean that you tell them to convert to your faith. I mean, you can certainly proselytize, it's your right, but you can't demand that they do it. But it means that the common philosophical construct of our society is based in Western civilization, which is Christian, Roman, and Greek, and that is our common heritage. You have to agree upon that because that's where our federal structure comes from. That's where our cultural predisposition to local rule and autonomy comes from, and that's what unites people. So, you know, whether you speak, you know, Mandarin or Mexican or Farsi at home is really irrelevant. And where you go to church on Sunday or mosque on Friday or synagogue on Saturday doesn't matter as far as the common culture goes, because that's what unites us.
Exactly.
Go ahead,
and the other corollary to that is, Rex, that they were speaking specifically in the context of what was going on in England, which was if you were not a member of the Anglican Church, you couldn't have any kind of political office in England. And what they were trying to say is we're not having a government that is that way, where you have to be part of the official established state religion in order to hold office, which is what was going on in England at the time. What they said is the states, of course, could have their own state religion because this is what was going on in Massachusetts. You could only hold office in Massachusetts if you were part of the, you know, dominant state religion. But at a federal level, you didn't have to be part of that. And so now we've extrapolated from this all this, you know, we've gone way too far in the, oh, they don't want religion to be expressed at all in public. And if you wear a cross, that's a terrible thing. If you wear a yarmulke, that's horrible. And if you, you know, that's not what they were talking about, for God's sake. They were saying that's fine. What all they were saying is it's not a qualifier for federal office. Only, and if it is, it's only to the extent that people have to vote for you, right? But you can't automatically disqualify someone, for instance, most recently, because they're Mormon, right? They may be Mormon, but that's not a disqualifier for federal office. It's up to the people to decide, you know, is this person good for this job? And some people will say, well, he's a Mormon, I can't vote for him, right, for whatever reason, you know, but at a federal level, you can't say, well, I disagree with your religion, and therefore you are automatically disqualified. That's kind of what they were trying to say.
Mm-hmm. But there's one thing that's unique, I mean, not unique, but that's common to all of these religious traditions, including Muslims and Jews and even people that have no religion, and that is that the core principles from a philosophical context as a civilizational perspective, not as a matter of faith, is you have to strengthen families. You have to have communities where people actually voluntarily take care of each other and take care of those who truly can't take care of themselves or those who are down on their luck, because that's what stems the government from trying to intervene in those areas in order to fill a need. If we take care of our needs ourselves
right,
and for each other, it keeps the government out of it. The government's role in a federalist structure is truly to only intervene in those areas where the local community cannot produce the necessary result. For example, you have a massive terrorist attack, an invasion of a foreign country, a significant natural disaster. Well, at that point, sometimes communities or charities or private organizations fail. Not always, but sometimes. If they do, then it falls to the government to do it. We, on the other hand, immediately throw FEMA at the problem and shut everybody else out and cause all sorts of havoc. So that happens because we live in silos. We don't speak to each other. We don't know our neighbors. We don't live in communities. We think everything is federalized, and we're just an autonomous individual that doesn't have anything to relate to the people around them because we take care of everything through Washington. And when Tex was talking about returning to federalism, that structure has to be based on exactly what John Quincy Adams said, that this Constitution is made for a moral and virtuous people. It's woefully inadequate for any other, because if you're not taking care of yourselves and your local communities, you're going to tempt men in government to come in and take over, and generally once they come in, they don't leave.
You know what, Rex? I know you and Tex haven't listened to Dr. Paul's full speech, but he had that in his speech.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's talked about that for a long time.
I think he's listened to the Tex and Rex show.
Yeah.
Paul.
Well, this is another misconception. It's another misconception about Ron Paul. Okay, people consider Ron Paul a quote libertarian. Now, he is a libertarian in the sense that Tex used, because he used an imperfect word because the liberals stole the real world, the real word. Libertarian in the sense that he believes in diffused power and federalism and free markets. He is not a libertarian in the mold of quasi-Johnson or the Libertarian Party, because Ron Paul is a conservative Christian physician, which is why he's a Republican. And it's why the Republicans are no longer Republican, because if you want to accuse them of being Christian, I mean, I'm sorry, but what the Republican Party does and has done for the last 15, 20 years doesn't express any Christian values that I know. So, you know, that's another misconception about Ron Paul. And you know, the problem with, quote, libertarian philosophy is that anything goes. Well, that's not how he presents it, because if anything goes, then you're likely to have an amoral and not virtuous society, in which case you'll have less cohesion in your community and you will tempt government to come in and take over.
I got something to add.
Well, folks, ladies and gentlemen, there's only about 9 minutes of recording time, and then there'll be 5 minutes for me to close things off. So,
okay.
To see if you can get a heads up on that.
Let me add something. I listened to 1 hour of Gary Johnson's town hall meeting and missed the last half hour because I needed to jump to the show. And before that, I had listened to Ron Paul's speech, plus I had the transcript, so I was able to get mentally, you know, very much into it. And one of the things that Gary Johnson had said in his speech, or in his town hall meeting, to one of his questions was, "Why I never did really understand why we didn't get more Ron Paul support, Ron Paul votes." And you just nailed it, because Ron Paul is not Gary Johnson. Gary Johnson is not Ron Paul. Anyway. Yeah, that was just an add-on to your comment there, Rex.
Well, I think that people need to realize that. And that does not mean, okay, you denigrate the Libertarian Party or you denigrate Gary Johnson. Because guess what? We're on the same side of this diffused power equation. Now, if you restore the proper balance of power vis-a-vis federalism, then the proper debate in this country, and we will go, you know, toe-to-toe, hand-to-hand, mano-a-mano in the Thunderdome, would be between a conservative party on the model of the Constitution Party and a liberal party on the model of the Libertarian Party. And may the best one win. But we got this false debate between Democrats and Republicans, who are really both just corporatists and statists. And that's why we need to change the conversation, which always comes down to ballot access and how you vote and how the votes are counted. And that is to be affected locally. And when the feds interfere, that's when you employ nullification, not secession. I'm done.
Yep. Right.
Exactly. Yes. And there are multiple levers of control to this. Everybody's bought into the notion that I sit on my ass, I eat popcorn, I watch TV shows all day, and then every 4 years I start tuning in, mostly, you know, within 2 months of the election, to who should be the president, after which time I'm presented with two shit choices. And then I'm like, come up with some sort of, you know, the equivalent of racist shorthand of the two parties, my scarecrow conception. of what the two parties are, and then I decide, you know, based on my lazy duff, well, I don't like that guy, so I'm going to go vote for this guy, or, ah, to hell with them, I'm going to stay home, and I'm going to change channels. Democracy is more involved than that, and if you don't like the way things are going, there are ways of participating in our politics and our society that don't just involve sitting on your ass for 4 years and then showing up to vote in an election for electors who actually pick the president, right? Now, they've kind of tried to short-circuit the elector system because they don't really like it. But you should be doing things in your local community. When you go sit on a jury, just listen to the arguments like, oh, this guy got caught with, you know, a dime bag of weed. I don't even know if they sell dime bags anymore. I mean, it seems like an invalid economic unit of weed to me now, like $10. What are they? I don't even know what's in that, right? But I would just assume, like, this guy hasn't done anything wrong. He's sitting at home. It's the equivalent of going and buying a beer. And I would just say that, you know, screw it. You know, now if there was something else, some other extenuating circumstances of the case, I might say, okay, look, you know, this guy is obviously a scumbag and got to do something. You know, but you sitting on a jury, you have power because you decide, right? This is the same thing with federal mandates on the state government. Coming down with, okay, now you have to do Obamacare. Well, various state constitutions state things about health care and what you can and cannot do about health care. Now, there is the supremacy clause of the Constitution, which says that the federal law is supreme over the state laws, but now you have a battle, a contest of wills to say that, you know, we're just not doing that in this state. You know, and also I will tell you guys with respect to Obamacare, I know everybody seems to have given up hope, but under U.S. law, you cannot litigate a tax until it has been paid. And so the taxes for Obamacare have not been paid. So Obamacare was struck down. Was upheld, but it was only upheld because the government has the ability to tax because it has the tax power. But no one has ever challenged Obamacare under the tax authority of the government. See what I'm saying? It was challenged under different statutes. So since no one has paid the tax, and they won't until January, no one can challenge Obamacare as a tax. Once someone pays the tax, that case will come up. And I would suspect, you know, in a best-case scenario, that Obamacare will be struck down as a tax.
So let me ask you a question. Why did Boehner say it's the law of the land? Why did he roll over on that then?
Because
he's a pussy.
That's yeah. A fucking rhino, piece of shit asshole. President, we are ready to be led. We are ready to be led. Like, I know I used to stand for something, but I lost an election. Well, I didn't really lose because I was reelected. But this piece of shit rhino that apparently I supported but didn't give too much of two shits about lost. Now that he's lost, we are ready to be told what to do. Hey, Boehner, you were ready to be told what to do in 2010. Don't fuck with me on that. Everybody who came into Washington, we got to fight this.
No left bombs, man.
Recording time. So, you know,
if you don't want to hear, if you don't want to hear colorful metaphors, do not ask texts about John Boehner or Karl Rove. I mean, what do you expect?
Duly noted. Duly noted.
These are just the most accurate metaphors used to describe them. I can, you know, under duress, come up with euphemisms to describe them, but, you know.
I've heard you describe him even more colorfully.
I do not like the man.
And he will again on Sunday.
Jack, of course,
please
I don't know.
Please don't
like
tell us how you...
Firstly, I dislike him.
Please don't tell us how you truly feel.
You know, I used to go in meetings in Washington, and, you know, they would kind of stop me, and they'd say, why don't you tell us how you really feel? Thinking that that would stop me, and unfortunately, it made it worse.
Duly noted.
It's like, oh, okay, let me tell you, now that you want to know how I really feel, you thought that was tame.
I want to run something by, because earlier you guys were on a run on a roll pretty strong there when Mary first came on, was talking about this petition thing, and I was jumping to try to get in there, but you guys were covering it very well. Here's the challenge, and this is what, if you've seen my posts about this, I've never given this petition any power. And anytime anybody's ever posted it on my group, including on other groups I'm on, it's a distraction. We have real issues that need to be taken care of. Whenever John Boehner stands up and says, you know, Obamacare is the law of the land, and Karl Rove is weakened to a point where he's bled out, and a pinprick can get this guy out of power, you know, we have real things that we can be battling for, educating people on nullification. Statistically, we have more states that are under Republican governors in House and Senate than there are Democrats. We are in a position where real things can be done, but we're signing petitions, which is giving FEMA and Obama your name and address for when it's time to come and get you, instead of focusing on real issues and things that we can change. That's why I'm so frustrated with stuff like this. I do not see it as an opportunity. I see it as a distraction when we could be building our coalitions. One thing just as a side note, I went back into all my friends' group and, you know, had a list of people I wanted to get rid of totally because of the abuse that we suffered at those people's hands when we were doing third-party work. Cleaning up my friends group, I noticed that you know, I don't have 500 friends anymore because a lot of them went bye-bye, but, you know, over 460-some friends, I noticed I was having troubles figuring out who had sold the soul to Rami.
Because have you been sleeping at the bathhouses again?
Yeah, no, but
who are you turning away at that point?
No, but here's an important point, is that not one of them had anything on Romney on their site. It was almost like as quick as the election was over, as quick as Romney lost, they couldn't wait to get all the Romney crap off their site.
Oh, I bet.
They never liked
it. That was an important – right. And,
right.
And they were only with them because they thought it would win.
Right, and so we can build those coalitions. There's real work that we can be doing right now that matters besides signing and empowering a petition that's just going to be the left-wing media is going to make us look like a bunch of kooks with. That was my input on that petition thing.
And with that, Chris, I hate to say it, but I will not have a night again where I am shut off from finishing off and having the last word on the show. No,
okay,
I'm just joking.
I'm just kidding, guys.
No, but
I just
wanted
to put my point
out. I'll get the closed things out, and then I'll be like, blah, 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 and then it cuts me off.
Well, Rex does
it. I think it's hilarious every time it happens, actually. But anyway, it is funny. I'll be talking, next thing you know, it cuts off. Thank you for calling Blog Talk Radio. Goodbye. I'm like, hey, wait a minute, I'm not finished. But anyway, I digress. But anyway, I will close out the show, folks, and thank you, everyone, for staying for the extended version. And also, if you are listening on the archives, thank you for listening to the extra part of the show. And I hope to see you all again. And everyone, take care. And I will close out the show as I do every other show. And that is by the music by Aubrey Ashburn. Take care and good night.